Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
All right, it is our final show of the week. As we do each and every week in this hour, this has become, I believe, our most popular segment of the entire week. It is time for...
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
That's right. Your opportunity to ask a question on any subject. Ideally, we'd like it to be something different, something creative, something interesting, something out of the box. And whoever comes up with the best question, the most interesting and unusual question, as determined by the most thought-provoking question, as determined by Matt Blaze, Kenneth, and Alex Barnard, we will give you a complimentary piece of The Other Side of Midnight merchandise. So if you have what it takes, you can give me a call at 800-848-9222, and we'll try and get to as many of your questions this hour as we possibly can. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Igor in Fairfield, New Jersey. Hello, Igor.
Greetings, Frank. Hey, Frank, I wanted to ask you about where you may have met Roger Stone for the first time. Did you work with him? How did you come to produce a documentary about him, you know, when you say, get me Roger Stone? And what's the most important thing do you think he told you or taught you about politics or running a campaign?
All good questions. Let me try to break each of those down in the manner in which you asked them. So the first question in terms of how I got to know Roger, about 22 years ago, I was very active, as I still am, in the third-party political movement. And I was active in the Reform Party. And about 22, 23 years ago, Donald Trump was poised to run for president with the Reform Party. And I was a big Trump supporter. And I'm such a fan of Pat Buchanan now. I feel silly saying this, but I didn't want Pat Buchanan to be the Reform Party nominee. I thought he was too right wing. I believed a lot of the media narratives about him being prejudiced and about him. Well, I don't want to say I believe them. I believe that having someone that was labeled as prejudiced and anti-Semitic would be a death knell to a budding third party movement. So I thought Donald Trump, who had tremendous appeal to independents, to Democrats, to Republicans, I thought he would be a great candidate for the Reform Party. So Roger, at the time, was the chairman of Donald Trump's exploratory committee to run for president Reform Party. So he and I started kind of collaborating in order to make a Trump candidacy a reality. Now, Trump ultimately didn't end up running, but we stayed in touch a little bit. And then we got to know each other really well 2 years later during Tom Golisano's campaign for governor of New York. Roger ran Golisano's campaign for governor. I was a big Golisano supporter, as I was in all of his campaigns for governor. In fact, I think Golisano is going to be the Grand Marshal of the Columbus Day Parade this year. I'm hoping we can get him in studio. But I got to know him really well through that 2002 campaign, and we always sort of stayed in touch. And then since then, from 2002, you know, he kind of had different ebbs and flows in his political career. He would go from being on the fringes of the political system to being disgraced. And throughout all that, we ended up staying pretty close friends. As far as that documentary, it's very interesting. It was right after the 2010 campaign for governor, and he and I had both worked on the campaign of Kristen Davis, the former Manhattan madam that ran for governor that year. And we were both hoping we could get her 50,000 votes because that would have been enough to get her party ballot access for 4 years. She didn't get the 50,000 votes, and we were both feeling pretty defeated. And he was in New York. At the time, he had dual residences in New York and Florida. He was in New York. I said, he said, and again, this was at a time when Roger was, he couldn't get arrested. And I mean that in the worst sense of the term, not the best. But Roger called me, he says, hey, what are you doing tonight? You want to have dinner and you want to get a cigar? I said, sure. Okay, we'll get a cigar. And I said, I'm going to this thing for New York Civic, which was Henry Stern's group. I said, why don't you come with me? Come with me to this thing and then we'll go out and grab dinner and a cigar afterwards. So he comes with me and all sorts of people at this event, Democrats, Republicans, independents, other political consultants, they all came over and greeted Roger. And he had, I've never seen somebody have this kind of reaction where they lit up a room like this when they're supposed to be disgraced and on the fringes. So one of the guys that was part of New York Civic at the time, Morgan Peckma, he wrote to me the next day and he said, hey, you know, it was great to meet you last night. Thanks for coming. Thanks for bringing Roger. Do you think I could have his number? So I gave him Roger's number. And then Morgan reaches out to me again a month or so later and says, do you think we can have lunch? So we get lunch and we're sort of making small talk. And I said, what do you do? He says, what do you do? Okay. And then Morgan, his hobby at the time was making movies. I said, oh, what kind of movies do you like to make? And he said, well, I make all sorts of things. I've done this, I've done that. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons that I reached out to you and one of the reasons that I was eager to reach out to Roger Stone was that I'm hoping to do a documentary about him, but he didn't call me back. So he said, maybe you can get Roger to agree to participate in the documentary. And if you can, you know, you can have a hand in helping us produce it and help us do the interviews, and you could be a producer. So that's exactly what happened. So that was 2011. And it took us years to work on that documentary. None of us thought that Donald Trump was going to be elected president 5 years later and that Roger was going to play such a big role in his presidential candidacy. But that kind of made the film. As far as things that that Roger taught me, too many things to list. I would say a lot of them are not necessarily about politics, but about style, about food. In terms of politics, one piece of advice that he always gave was losers don't legislate. And he said he got that from Richard Nixon, and that was an important piece of advice because I always have a tendency to hold to a moral high ground and to do things the way I want to do them, not necessarily the way things are going to end up in a win. And he made clear to me that if you don't win, you're not in a position to pass any of the policy agenda that you want. So I hope that answers your question. Thank you. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to William in Asbury Park. Hello, William.
Hey, Mr. Moreno, I wish my question was that creative, and I certainly appreciated the first question. What was your favorite cartoon growing up?
Oh, that's a good question. I had a bunch. If I had to pick one, and there were many that I enjoyed, but if I had to pick one, I'm going to say, look, I'm always a science fiction guy, right? So I always had a thing for science fiction. I'm going to say it's probably the Jetsons. I really love the Jetsons. Which was yours?
Robotech.
I don't remember that one. What was that one?
That one, it was made off of a Japanese cartoon called Macross. It was a Japanese anime cartoon. It aired late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, okay.
And the gist of the story is aliens attack Earth and devastate everything, and you know the rest.
So it's a feel good,
big magical spaceship fights off the aliens.
I love it. Feel good cartoon. I have to check that one out. Yeah, I love the Jetsons. I like the Flintstones as well. I liked a lot of the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. I like the Looney Tunes and that kind of thing also. But if I had to pick a favorite, it would be either the Jetsons or the Flintstones, one of the two. A lot of other ones that I enjoy, but it would be one of those two. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222, whatever you have a question about. Larry is on Long Island. Hello, Larry.
Frank, very simple question tonight.
Mm-hmm.
If your wife came to you tomorrow and admitted to having an affair over many years since you guys were together, would you stay with her?
It's an affair with one person or it's an affair with multiple people?
You choose.
Well, I mean, it depends, right? I mean, if it's an affair with multiple people, it's such a good question. If it's an affair with one person, then that leads one to think that maybe there's an emotional connection there that, that is deeper than something that we have. I'm just trying to think this out loud here because as surprising as it is, I've never spent a great deal of time thinking about this. If it's multiple people, then maybe I could rationalize it in my own brain as I'm not fulfilling some need that she has either physically or emotionally, and she has an itch that she needs scratched. And as far as whether I would stay with her or not, I think a lot of it would depend on whether or not she wanted to stay with me. If she's been cheating on me for years and said, look, I'm not in love with you and I have been cheating on you for even before we were married and I don't want to stay with you, then no, I wouldn't. But that being said,
she's actually coming to you and asking for forgiveness.
Yeah. Well, I have to be honest. I always kind of scoffed at people that would talk about what a game changer children was in a relationship. And I would always scoff at people that said they were staying together because of their children. But I'd have to say, if she asked for forgiveness and she wanted to stay together, I would absolutely stay together because she is an incredible mother to our son. And I can't imagine parenting Carmine without her. So I would probably forgive her. I mean, again, it's easy to say that in the hypothetical sense. It's a much tougher thing when reality and rubber meet the road, but it's a much tougher thing to when it's reality. But I think I would forgive her and I think I would stay with her if for no other sake than to, for the benefit of our son. I have friends, honestly, that the spark is long out of their marriage and they're staying with their husband or their wife because of their children. And, before I had a child of my own, I would always think, oh, how sad that is, how terrible that is. And now I kind of have a different perspective. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Mike in Ohio. Hello there, Mike.
Good morning, Frank. I was just wondering, earlier this week you were speaking with Dr. Sky, and during your conversation with him, it caused me to wonder, what country do you think will be the first to land a person on Mars, and what year do you anticipate that happening?
Well, I would hope that it would be the United States. I recognize that maybe it won't be the U.S. government as it was with the moon. I think maybe, though, that it will be somebody that's an American private sector space, associate, like an Elon Musk or a Richard Branson type. I could absolutely see that. In terms of what year, look, I have no idea, honestly, but I think the Russian timeline is between 2040 and 2045. So if we're in a new space race where the goal is to get to the moon, to Mars instead of the moon, I'd love to try and one up them on that and try and beat the Russians to Mars, maybe 2039. So I'm going to say my optimistic projection is that it's a private sector American company and that it's by 2039. Thank you. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Haya in Brooklyn. Hello, Haya.
Hi, Frank. Congratulations on your sister-in-law's wedding.
Thank you. I will pass that on to her.
So you had mentioned that she had converted to Orthodox Judaism, and I saw a beautiful photo of her and her husband. He's a Hasidic Jew.
Yeah, I don't know if he's if he's Hasidic or just Orthodox or I'm not sure, but yes, he's certainly an observant Jew.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how was the wedding? I saw a photo of you and your brothers at the wedding. How did you feel? Did you feel uncomfortable? Was this your first Orthodox Jewish wedding? And how is your family accepting of her? Like, how do they feel about her converting to Judaism, being that they're all Christian?
Yeah, all good questions. The wedding was phenomenal. I was really impressed at the wedding, and I was really kind of blown away. Everything about it was great. The music was great. The food was great. Everybody that was there was great. Simca's family, they all seemed like really nice people. They all came down from Canada to be there. And it was not my first Orthodox wedding. I was at another Orthodox wedding about a year and a half ago. But I thought it was a great experience. You know, what I have been to a lot of secular Jewish weddings before. In fact, I've videotaped a lot of secular Jewish weddings before. And one of the things that was always standard when I would go to a secular or reformed Jewish wedding service is that there would be a basket of yarmulkes when you walk in. At this wedding, there was no basket of yarmulkes, I guess because my brothers-in-law and me were the only ones that don't wear a yarmulke all the time, so they didn't have a big need to have a basket of yarmulkes. So I did feel a little awkward that during the ceremony that, my brothers-in-law and I were the only ones that didn't have yarmulkes on. If there's one drawback of the ceremony, I totally understand that it's tradition to separate the men and women, not only during the ceremony, but
that.
It would be nice to have had my wife.
With women.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a dancer anyway, but it would have been nice to have some women on our side of the room once in a while, you know?
How do your family feel about that she left Christianity and she married an Orthodox Jew? She herself became an Orthodox Jew. How do they feel?
You know, my mother-in-law tends to keep her feelings pretty close to the vest, and I don't want to reveal too much, but I will say I don't think that it's necessarily something that she's overly enthusiastic about. I'll say that, but I will say all of her 8 siblings, including my wife and certainly my mother-in-law, they all really wish her a lot of happiness and the best, and they all do whatever they can to support her decisions and whatever that involves. So I think
Children, you know what? That's when sometimes the parents become more accepting once they have children, and
sure,
it brings everybody
together. You're exactly right, Haya. Thank you for the call. 800-848-9222. Diane is in Virginia. Hello, Diane.
Yes, hi. Do you think it would be good to have our presidents elected to a one-time six-year term, and aren't there some governors that have that 6-year term limit?
Well, that's a great question. That's how Mexico does it. They have 1 6-year term for their president. And, Larry Sabato, who's a political scientist that I really respect, he wrote a book called A More Perfect Constitution. And that's one of the proposals that he includes in there. It's such a good question, and it's one that I've thought a lot about. I'm not ready to commit to that one yet. I think there's only 2 states, might even be just one, but I think there's only 2 states that allow you to have a term limit of 1, and that's Virginia is the one that immediately comes to mind. There may be one other. The thing is with Virginia, and I covered this a little bit with Brian Kilmeade yesterday. If you do that, essentially you almost immediately become a lame duck. Now, there's something to be said for that, in that you're not going to spend the 5.5 years of your presidency fundraising. Presumably, you spend it on doing the right thing and on legislating and on making deals with political adversaries, on doing the right thing for the public. But the other thing is, if people know, especially your legislative adversaries, that all they have to do is wait you out, then maybe that will lead to you not having the kind of gravitas that you need for internal negotiations. So I'm not willing to embrace that. But one of the things that I'm really open to, and thank you for the call, Diane, one of the things that I'm really open to is the idea of a new constitutional convention. I know you have the Convention of States project, and you have a lot of people both on the left and the right that are pushing for a new constitutional convention. One of the things that I've actually agreed to do is I was recently asked to be a delegate in sort of a basically a fantasy football style constitutional convention where you tweak the amendments as you would if you were a delegate to a new Article 5 convention. And I think I'm interested to hear the arguments on both sides. I think it's an interesting question, Diane. I don't want to rule it out, but I'm not ready to endorse that yet either. I see the pluses. I see the minuses. I'd want to look at how it's worked out in Mexico and in other places that that I've done it. But I love the out-of-the-box thinking, Diane. I really do. I'm all for, as you hear me, railing for nonpartisan elections and proportional representation and all sorts of other reforms to our electoral system. I'm all for wholesale reform of politics because our political process is totally broken, and I'm all for looking for ways to fix it. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. We'll continue straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is the Ian song from the YouTube by the guy who sings your name over and over. We dedicate this to the fella that participated in the $1,000 minute yesterday who didn't know the name of Hurricane Ian. I still am floored by that. I thought about that all day today, yesterday. I don't know how that's possible. And again, I know people freeze up and I know people draw blanks, but it's almost as if I asked you, what's your own name? And you didn't get that right. All right, 800-848-9222. We're doing whatever we can to answer your questions on any subject. We are doing our weekly
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything. Ask Frank Anything.
That's right. Whoever comes up with the best question this hour, as determined by Kenneth, Matt Blaze, and Alex Barnard, we're going to give you a complimentary prize, too. So come armed with creative questions, interesting questions. We've got a few already, which I love. And if you have something that's out of the box, that's different, that's creative, give us a call, 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Irv on Long Island. Hello, Irv.
Hey, Frank. Good morning. It's always a treat to talk to you. My wife doesn't usually let me keep the radio on while she's trying to sleep. But anyway, I've been listening to talk radio for many decades. So I'm wondering, who is your favorite all-time radio talk show host?
It's such a tough question because I've had different favorites at different times. The three that most immediately come to mind are Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, and Jay Diamond, right? But the thing that you got to understand is, especially with Rush and Howard, who had such lengthy careers, and Howard's case, his career is still going on, they really go through so many different phases of their career. So, for instance, like the Rush of 1998 certainly did not sound anything like the Rush of 2016. So, I mean, so the Rush of when I say Rush was my favorite, I mean the Rush of like 1996, not the Rush of 2017. And it's very different radio show at that point. Jay Diamond, I don't think there's a better voice than him. I the others that come to mind pretty close to the top are Bob Grant, John Gambling, Tom Likas, and Doug McIntyre. If you're going to gun to my head, gun to my head, I'm going to say Jay Diamond. Jay is, to me, Curtis is really terrific. I must say, Curtis is really so great. Because he's on so often, I think a lot of people don't necessarily appreciate how talented Curtis is. But Curtis is honestly, and it's a very difficult thing, Curtis is not only a gifted intellect, and I mean that sincerely, but he's also a gifted entertainer. And usually most performers on radio have one or the other, but Curtis is able to seamlessly blend both. But I don't know that I could pick one, but those are my tops. Rush, Howard Stern, Jay Diamond, Bob Grant, John Gambling, Tom Likas, Doug McIntyre, and maybe Curtis.
See, I told you so.
Yeah, it's interesting that you differentiate eras. I wasn't thinking about that, but I think you're right. My favorite was Bob Grant.
Get off my phone.
Exactly. But I appreciate your approach, your combination of discussing current events and pop culture. That's something that Curtis also does. Thanks for those insights. I love Jay Diamond, too.
Thank you, Irv. Appreciate it. I was actually talking to Jay yesterday. He had some interesting things to say. Maybe I'll share one or two. 800-848-9222. Corey in Palm Bay, in the midst of the heart of this hurricane. Corey, were you able to collect enough money from your GoFundMe to buy a new grill cover?
Yes, I bought several new grills with it.
Thank you. So, thank goodness.
Thank you. So my question was, are you superstitious?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think every baseball player, and not that I played baseball at any advanced level, but anybody that gets very into playing baseball at any point is pretty superstitious. So I still, when I go on the baseball field, I don't step on the foul line. If there's a no-hitter going on, even if I'm just watching the game at home, I'll never mention it. But yes, I am incredibly superstitious. I will. I adhere to just about every superstition there is.
Same here. If I'm driving and I have no traffic, and somebody asks me, "Oh, how's the traffic?" I say, "No comment."
I'm the same way, Corey.
You know. Because as soon as I say, "Oh, I'm flying, there's no problem," bam, traffic.
You know, it's so funny. So my wife and I are driving out to Long Island tomorrow, and a lot of the time we'll be on one of these long drives to Long Island or New Jersey or wherever, and she'll say to me, "You know, we really haven't had bad traffic." And I'll say, "Honey, I don't know why you would say that, because that is just the absolute worst thing that you could say." Corey, thank you. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Alfredo in Newark. Hello, Alfredo.
Hello, Frank. Good morning.
Morning.
Frank, if China become number one in the world in most aspects, what do you think American society, how will change?
That's a good question, and it's one that I've spent a great deal of time thinking about, right? I think it's going to take a while before China is G1. How will American society actually change? Well, I think in the short term, American society will not necessarily change tremendously in any noticeable way in the immediate future, because so much of the reason that China would become the number one economy in the world is because of America. If you look at where China has experienced growth, it's largely in manufacturing things that they sell to American consumers, which American consumers purchase. So we're almost, even though the Chinese might not be crazy about us and we might not be crazy about this, about the Chinese, we're almost in this symbiotic relationship with the Chinese, because so much of what we use and consume on a daily basis is Chinese. Also, in order to keep our government running, we need to borrow all sorts of money from the Chinese. The Chinese are borrowing treasury bonds or buying treasury bonds and allowing the United States government to keep floating. So I guess the biggest way that it would change is if China ever decided to stop lending us money, and if they decided that they wanted more advantageous trade circumstances. I guess maybe the area where you'd see the biggest difference the most quickly is in the manufacturing sector, right? So if you manufacture something that is exported to China, if you're an American manufacturer that exports to China, and China decided that they wanted to pursue a much more stringent protectionist trade policy. Their trade policies are already pretty protectionist, but if they wanted to pursue a much more stringent protectionist trade policy, that could put our American manufacturers in a tough spot. So I wish I had a better answer, but I think for the foreseeable future, even if China is able to surpass the American economy, I think by and large it would be pretty similar, except maybe in the manufacturing sector. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Sammy in New Jersey. Hello, Sammy.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Okay, I just wanted to ask you, if you were a mosquito, who would you bite?
Oh, you know, I honestly try to live my life in pretty on terms where I don't really wish anybody ill will, and I try not to be.
It's not
yeah, yeah. No, I'm trying to think. So, who would I want to annoy with an itchy mosquito bite? Let me think here. Let's see. Maybe I'll go with who would I bite? I would bite. You know who I'd bite? I'd bite that guy that broke into my neighbor's car 2 days ago and stole his water bottle, because there was no need for that. And he's now our whole block is up in arms because they think there's a thief on the loose. So I'd bite that guy. I'd sting that guy. That's probably where I'd go first. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Henry is in Manhattan. Hello, Henry.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
I'm just wondering, have there been political people that you have had an about-face change of heart as to whether you think they're good or good for the country or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd have to go on a case-by-case basis. You'd kind of have to throw a person at me, and I could tell you whether, you know, what I think of them. I wouldn't say when a change of heart or an about-face. There are certainly people who my views have changed about positively or negatively. I'm trying to think who. Go ahead.
What about New York State governors?
Well, look, I was never fond of Andrew Cuomo, and while I think he did a couple of good things in his first term, especially, I remained unfond of Andrew Cuomo. Oh, you know one that I'll give you? That's a great example. That kind of jogs my memory. Elliot Spitzer. I actually voted for Elliot Spitzer in 2006. I regretted it almost immediately. I think he was an awful governor, and I think he's a pretty creepy person. And that's somebody who I thought I was very optimistic about his ability to reform the state, and he turned into being a tremendous disappointment. That's a great example. Elliot Spitzer is somebody who I voted for and was incredibly disappointed with in terms of his performance, both in office and his performance as a person. In terms of people that went the other way, I'll be honest with you, and I'm hesitant to say this because I've been so critical of the different things that he's done as mayor. Somebody that I thought was going to be horrible in 2013 was Eric Adams. Eric Adams, when he was a state senator, I thought this guy was the biggest charlatan, the biggest race hustler, the biggest crook that there was. And it killed me that this guy was going to run for borough president of Brooklyn and be completely unopposed. So I actually recruited a candidate to run against Eric Adams. And I don't want to say put it this way, but I dug up this old city councilman that had been out of office for almost 50 years. And I put him up to run against Eric Adams in a Democratic primary. And they threw him off the ballot. They threw him off the ballot on a legal technicality. They said we made a mistake with our cover sheet, and they threw him off the ballot. And Eric Adams got to go into office unopposed. And I thought he was going to be horrible. And I have to say, in the 8 years that he was borough president, I really grew to like him very much. Not as a person. I don't really know him as a person. But I liked a lot of the different things that he did. That being said, I think he's done a lot of wacky things in the 9.5 months, 10 months that he's been mayor. And I say I don't want to go through them all now, but I say it on a regular basis, the thing that he's done. But in terms of somebody that significantly improved their standing, in my view, it was certainly Eric Adams fits that bill. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Mike is in New Rochelle. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Frank. I heard you mention how your favorite talk show host. Can you mention any of your favorite radio disc jockey music DJs?
Well, I always liked I was like Scott Shannon. I always liked Cousin Brucey. I was always a fan of Dan Ingram. I always liked Scott Muni, obviously, before he died. In terms of I think those are the ones that most immediately come to mind. Scott Muni, Scott Shannon, Cousin Brucey, and Dan Ingram. And honestly, somebody that I give a lot of credit to as a disc jockey and someone who I really enjoy listening to was Mark Simone. Mark Simone, both with his Saturday Night Oldies show, his Saturdays with Sinatra show, the show that he used to do on WNEW. You know, Mark Simone, say what you want about him. Certainly a very weird guy, but a gifted disc jockey and someone that has a larger-than-life radio presence. So he would be certainly right up there. 800-848-9222. Mark is in Garden City. Hello, Mark.
How's it going, Frank?
It's going well, thanks.
Frank, earlier this week, there's a caller, Stan from Manhattan, and he called into Dominic Carter's show. He made some kind of a comment, and Dominic said he wouldn't allow him back on the show until he apologized. I turned on the radio right after the comment. I'm wondering if you know what that comment was.
You know, I wasn't listening at the time, so I only know what I hear kind of secondhand in the hallways here. And luckily, this is a hallway where there's a lot of people that like to chirp and gossip. I think he made a comparison. I don't know. And first of all, I think Stan is from Queens, not Manhattan. But I think he made a comparison to Trump being Nazi-like or Hitler-like or something along those lines.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was wondering what it was.
Yeah, that's my understanding. That's my understanding. 800-848-9222. Joe is on Long Island. Hello, Joe.
Hey, how are you, buddy?
Good.
How do we change these bail reform laws? And, did you hear what happened today in Astoria with the EMT getting killed?
I did, yeah.
Horrible.
I did. I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily directly tied to bail reform. I think that has more to do with the number of mentally ill people that are the violently mentally ill people that are out on the street, which is a whole separate discussion. But the thing that we need to do if you want to change bail reform is to elect enough people to the state legislature that are going to do that. Now, I know that sounds simplistic, but that's why political reform is really the key to everything else. If you reform politics itself, then you'll get folks that are able to run for office, not necessarily appealing to the most extreme wing of their party. You know, if you think about it, in New York City, which dominates the legislature and dominates the state, New York City, 80%, 90% of the city has districts that are Democratic. That means whoever wins the Democratic primary is going to win the general election. So what do you have to do to win a Democratic primary? You have to be the most left-wing candidate possible. And that, by extension, that's who gets elected, even though that's not really representative of how New Yorkers feel. So the only way you change that is by political reform. Things like proportional representation or nonpartisan election, term limits, you know, democracy vouchers, all that sort of things which give the people more power, not the politicians. Now, I have been campaigning for years, almost my entire life, for initiative and referendum, and allowing you, the voters, to pass laws, right? And some people have called me an anarchist. They say, "Oh, whatever, I don't care." What if you, Joe, could circulate signatures to change the bail reform law, and then get the voters themselves to vote on that issue, and not have to rely on some politicians? And that's where I think, and I said this the other day, I think Lee Zeldin is really being so short-sighted. Lee Zeldin said last weekend he doesn't care what the legislature is going to do. He's willing to do away with the bail reform laws itself. I think that is such a dangerous approach. And I think Lee Zeldin rather than running on a platform of being making the state less democratic with a small d, he should be running on strengthening democracy and giving the voters the opportunity to make these changes for themselves. Rather than talk about how you're going to fire Alvin Bragg on day one, which you can't do. You can begin the process on day one, but you can't fire him on day one. Why not give New Yorkers, as Andrew Giuliani campaigned on, give New Yorkers the ability for recalling public officials? Make the politicians afraid of the voters. Make the state more democratic. That's what I think needs to be done. But the short answer to your question, Joe, is you got to elect more people to the state legislature who are willing to do that. 800-848-9222, two open lines if you want to jump on board. Bill is in Huntington. Hello, Bill.
Okay. This question is about Superman, okay?
Love it. Yep.
Superman's semen contains his masculine essence.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, at the climax of the act of love, his ejaculate should have the muzzle velocity of a speeding bullet. Are you with me so far?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So what does this do to Lois Lane?
Well, that's a good question. That's one that I never saw addressed in either the comics or the movies. But I couldn't really say, Bill. I don't know. I thought you were going to talk about the powers of a son of Superman, of something along those lines. But I couldn't really say. Maybe she's just a real trooper. What can you say? I don't know. 800-848-9222. Three open lines if you have a question. We'll continue and try and get to as many of your questions as we can straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Fireflies by Owl City. If you ever want to know what kind of music we're playing on this program, you can go ahead and join our Facebook group. We post those in there every day. And you could just search Morano Radio Fans and Haters on Facebook. That's Morano Radio Fans and Haters. We're taking your questions on any subject, 800-848-9222. We are in the midst of
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
You know, I've been trying to go to new people that we don't routinely hear from. But I feel bad when there have been people holding a while. So what we'll do is I'm going to go every other one, whoever's been holding the longest and whoever's been holding the least amount of time. So this way we can mix it up. So who's been holding the longest? Andy on Staten Island. What is your question, Andy? Andy! All right, Andy. Thank you. All right. Who else has been holding a while? John is in Brooklyn. Hello, John.
Frank, what do you think of the Brooklyn Book Festival's decision to have a panel consisting only of police and prison abolitionists?
You know,
which they'll do this Sunday.
Honestly, John, you are my guy on the Brooklyn Book Festival. As much as you might give me a hard time about my views on foreign policy or other things, I don't know of a person that has studied and been more vocal on the Brooklyn Book Festival than you. So kind of whatever you say on the Brooklyn Book Festival, you are my go-to source on that. I have to be honest, I don't follow the goings-on in the Brooklyn Book Festival too closely, and shame on me if that's the case. But look, you can't follow everything. And if I didn't even know, I'm embarrassed to admit it, I didn't even know that that was the case. I am the guy that likes, as I hope you could tell from the show, dialogue, right? I like having all sorts of different people, all sorts of different views, right? And I have no problem having police abolitionists and prison abolitionists, but I want to see them on there with hardline criminal justice warriors, right? People that can have a real discussion about that kind of thing. And when I put together panels, both on the radio and in panels in real life, that's what I try to do. But if that's the case, if they only have the one side represented, John, if it's as you say, then that's a shame. And that is not at all the kind of thing that I think is productive. I don't think it's good for free speech or anything like that. Eddie is in Clarkstown. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, Frank. Question is, do you think there will ever be another queen who will be in the throne for 70 years and without any controversy? And also, by the way, what is her last name?
I believe her last name, I'm going to get this wrong. I'm going to have to look it up. But I want to say her last name is Stewart. Do you know her last name?
I don't.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to look it up. But I don't think that there'll be ever another. Well, I doubt that there'll ever be a monarch that's 70 years old. That reigns for 70 years. Because part of the reason that she got to do that is because she became a monarch so young. Or her last name, I believe, was Windsor, they say. Elizabeth Alexandra Mary Windsor. So that was her last name. But I think that's part of the reason why she got to reign so young. And now with people living longer and longer, I don't know that you'll ever see somebody become a monarch at the age that she did. So unless you become a monarch in your 20s or early 30s, you're not going to be able to reign for 70 years. 800-848-9222. Tom in the Bronx. Hello, Tom.
Yes, yeah, I'd like to say two things. Yeah. First of all, did you ever see the animation, Laverne and Shirley and their commanding pig? That was hilarious.
No, I watched Laverne and Shirley, but I never saw Laverne and Shirley animation, no.
They may have been actresses that did the part, but they sounded just like the individuals that played Laverne and Shirley. The second thing I'd like to say is the King of England, when he was a prince, he should have been an actor because he had the addiction for it, he had the accent for it, and I bet he would have made some heck of an actor. You know that?
Well, I don't know. You know what? Acting. Thank you, Tom. I'm no great critic of actors, but acting is a craft, right? It's something that you, when done well, you have to train for, and without that training. I don't know. King Charles never really struck me as someone that was out of central casting for being an actor. All right, 800-848-9222. Karen is in New Jersey. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Frank. There was a caller last night, and you asked them to come to my home tonight to check on me.
I don't remember that. What was that, Karen? What was the caller?
I didn't hear the radio last night, but I just heard reference made.
Yeah, I don't remember that, Karen. Sorry. Did they come to your home to check on you?
No one's come yet.
Okay. Yeah. Do you need help, Karen?
No, I am fine right now.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Karen, email me if you need anything or send me a text message at 8168-MURANO. Matt, do you know what she's talking about? Kenneth, do you know what she's talking about? Yeah, no, I mean, I have a pretty good memory. I was thinking of all the weird callers that called last night, all the funny callers, all the serious callers, and that doesn't ring a bell. I don't remember saying anyone to – I mean, it's possible I said something jokingly, but let me just say, don't show up at Karen's home. She doesn't need help. I don't want anybody showing up, and I don't want Karen blaming me. 800-848-9222, who's been holding the longest. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
Good morning, Bard of Knowledge.
Please.
Could you send Gal Gadot over to me, please? I need help with my Yiddish.
Yeah, we'll do that, yes.
Thank you, Frank. You know, Frank, Florida has 21.5 million people. Now, the government is squeezing out gasoline vehicles and forcing people to go electric. Now, when you have a natural disaster like a hurricane where power goes out, you got to be at least a million. If it's 21 million people, at least a million, probably a lot more than a million vehicles. How do they charge up and evacuate without being stuck there and dying?
Well, Neil, I think your question's more rhetorical rather than one that requires an answer from me. You're exactly right. I mean, you've put your finger on one of the many problems with electric vehicles, right? And I'm not against electric vehicles if that's what people want to do. But as you know, Trump and John Catsimatidis covered this in their discussion, and there's a lot of pitfalls, namely the fact that as of now, the way the technology is now, the way the charging stations are now, you can't drive for more than a couple hours. And that's a fair point. If there's no power, where are you going to charge your vehicle? All right, we have a first timer.
We're sorry.
Nick is in Maryland, Charm City, yeah. From WCBM. Hello there, Nick.
Sounds good. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
You do a good show every night.
Thank you.
I was wondering, would you ever like to interview George Norrie?
Well, sure. I'd be happy to interview him. You know, he's on at the same time I am, so that yeah. might be very difficult. I have a lot of respect for George Norrie. He's done a lot of great things in radio. He is one of the most listened to. He is the most listened to overnight radio host in the whole country, so you can't knock it. I did get to interview Art Bell, who really kind of built that franchise. And to me, that's when that show was at its best, when Art Bell was hosting it. But I'm not knocking anything George Norrie's been able to do. Look, you know, the bottom line is anybody that does this and does it well makes it sound easy, but it's not easy. And if you can have the kind of success that George Norrie has had on that many stations, that kind of revenue success, that kind of rating success, that many stations that want him on, look, hats off to him. Hats off to him. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to, very quickly, I want to try and run through these. Howard in Elmhurst. Hello, Howard.
Hi, how are you?
Hey.
I'd like to know, what three books would you recommend that best describe our current political situation?
You know, a book that was recommended to me, of all people, by Steve Bannon, and I got a lot out of this book, is called The Revolt of the Elites and the Betrayal of Democracy by Christopher Lesch. And if people are Democrat and they don't like Steve Bannon, it's not a right-wing book, but it is a book that does a good job getting into the nuts and bolts of some of the problems in politics these days. Another one is The Deep State by Mike Lofgren. And another one that I'll mention is by Peter Kiernan, Becoming China's Bitch and Nine More Catastrophes That We Must Avoid Right Now, Peter Kiernan. Those three books are a good place to start, I think. All right. You know, those of you that are on hold, if you want to keep hanging, you guys can be grandfathered in. Otherwise, no more questions. Matt Blaze, do you have a winner?
Bill from Huntington about Superman and his concern for Lois Lane.
Really? That's what you guys came up with? All right. Bill from Huntington, call back. I don't agree with this decision, but call back and give yourself get a prize. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
So we are still keeping an eye on what's going on in Florida, and it looks like Hurricane Ian is making its way up the coast now to South Carolina. It is once again, as I understand it, a hurricane. It was a tropical storm, and I don't even really understand how these things become hurricanes. I think it has to do with wind speed and things like that. But as I understand it now, it is once again a hurricane, and it is now making its way to South Carolina. And if there's anybody in South Carolina or Georgia or Florida that's been through this, you're welcome to give us a call and share your perspective. I think there's a lot of folks around the country that would be pretty curious to know what it's been like going through this. I was just texting with a friend of mine that lives in an area that was very hard hit by this. And I asked him to call in at this right now, but he said he's exhausted. He spent the whole day picking up debris, and I couldn't blame him for wanting to go to sleep instead. And, you know, I was talking to my father and stepmother. They're in Orlando. They say it's going great over there. They said the biggest problem they've had, they said Disney has been phenomenal. They sent a photo to my siblings and me, and they said that they're roughing it at the Enchanted Rose, plastic only, no glasses, no glass. That's the extent. They had to have drinks in plastic instead of glass. That's the difficulty that they've been experiencing in Orlando. So they gave Disney very high marks for their handling of this. But so far, they are attributing 19 deaths to this storm. Hopefully that number turns out to be high. But as of now, that's where they are. They're attributing 19 deaths to this. And it's now heading to South Carolina. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll bring you any information as it comes. And you're welcome to call in at 800-848-9222. One thing on this front that I did want to share with you is there was an article today in Politico that this storm has sort of represented a sea change when it comes to politics. Because it used to be, when you had a serious natural disaster like this, and Hurricane Ian fits the description, forced airports to suspend operation, roads and bridges closed, hotels and resorts turning tourists away. But with all that, this life-threatening hurricane was not enough to stop campaigns from both parties from airing ads both on television or digitally, including negative ones. Even as Ian spawned tornadoes and brought torrential rain and storm surges to Florida, you still saw Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, Republican Senator Marco Rubio, Democratic Congressman Val Demings, who's running for Senate, all continuing to run ads during the storm. Now, Val Demings did ultimately pull the ads from the Tampa and Fort Myers markets where the storm is expected to cause the most damage. And I'm curious what you think of that. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. My view is it's pretty low class, honestly. I think if you did want to run an ad, if you're a politician, saying something to the effect of, we're wishing everybody the best of luck, and it's crises like these which show the importance of strong leadership and strong crisis management skills, and that's why we need mature administrators in office, and that's why you should vote for me, I think that's one thing. But if you're just going to run a routine mudslinging negative ad attacking your opponent, I don't think that's an appropriate thing to do while people are watching television waiting to see how high the storm surge is going to be, how long they're going to have to be away from their home, whether or not their car gets submerged by a storm surge. I don't think that's an appropriate thing to do. And I'm curious where you come down on this. No judgment either way. I'm just kind of curious how people think about this. 800-848-9222. A fella that has never been one of my favorites is somebody that I ended up agreeing a great deal with yesterday, and that's former governor of Florida, Jeb Bush. What he said yesterday was, I think campaigns should shift to helping what will be hundreds of thousands of Floridians that will need a lot of assistance. I agree with that. I think that's what the campaigns should be doing, working on helping people, not working on getting negative ads on television to take advantage of the fact that everyone's watching this weather coverage and put on these ads slamming their opponent. Curious what you think. 800-848-9222. Steve Vancor, a pollster and longtime campaign consultant who's worked for Democrats and nonpartisan candidates, said campaigns continuing to push ads during a major natural disaster speaks to the evolving nature of politics. Quote, there once was a time when there was a natural disaster that everyone would drop everything, at least for a few minutes. Those norms are now out the window. He's right. We are in a new world, and I don't think this is a better world as it relates to these things. What do you think? 800-848-9222. Besides televised ads, some campaigns are also emailing and texting voters asking for money. And campaign staff continue to post on social media. I recognize that these elections are important and that folks want to make sure they're reaching out to voters and doing whatever they can to get their message out. That being said, it just strikes me as kind of Bush League. Right? Pardon the pun when we're talking about Jeb Bush. But curious what you think. 800-848-9222. Coming up in about 2 hours, we're going to talk with Martha Byrne. I don't know if you remember Martha Byrne, but she was an Emmy Award-winning soap opera star whose husband was a decorated NYPD sergeant. And we did a lengthy interview with Martha Byrne in which she made, I think, a very compelling case that her husband was being targeted by the FBI unfairly. And her husband's been arrested. He's in some trouble now. He's currently incarcerated. And she's trying to get the word out about his case. So she's going to join us in about 2 hours with an update on how things are going for his case. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. We also have denunciations coming up in about 45 minutes. Let me say hello to Leo on the Upper West Side. Hello, Leo.
Good morning, Frank. I just comment about the political ads run during the hurricane. I believe that actually the politicians, their people make deal, some contract with the TV, and once it's approval for a particular ad, doesn't matter if it's positive or negative, it's for that particular one, and they have some deal. They pay a lot of money for hours. When it's going to be run, how often during that day, I think it's out of the hand of the politicians at that time.
Well, no, I mean, that's not true. I know this, having worked on radio for a long time, the politicians can pull their ads. They can say, look, I don't want my ads running anymore, and they stop running them. I mean, but you're right. These are all ads that they had already previously bought time for. I get that. But if the politicians wanted, they could stop running ads. I mean, nobody forces them to keep their ads running. 800-848-9222. Norman is in Brooklyn. Hello, Norman.
Hello, Frank. Yeah, you know, I was telling the screener, in addition to me being a pesky WABC caller, I'm also a hurricane survivor of Hurricane Sandy. I had, I had 6 feet, another 5.5, 6 feet of raw sewage in my house. Everything was wrecked. I was homeless, living in a FEMA hotel for 6 months.
Right, I heard you describing this to Rita the other day.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that was the other day. So, but basically, I don't have any problem with the ads. I think it's the world we're living in, Frank. We're not going back to the nice time. And I think it's a war. And from my perspective, I think I'm on the good side. And I don't have any problem if the good side is doing everything they can to win. And that's it. And so this is my opinion.
Well, but it's also the people that you think are on the bad side that are running ads as well, doing everything they can.
You know what? That's the way it is, Frank. That's the world we live in.
Yeah. Thank you, Norman. It is the world we live in. I don't think it should be, personally. And so while I'm no great fan of Jeb Bush, I tend to agree with him on this. Hey, a couple of other quick things that I want to bring to your attention, and you're welcome to call in. We have 8 open lines if you want to jump on board. But I saw one article a couple of days ago that really piqued my interest. You know, one of the things that has seemed to unite people of all ages, Americans of all ages, Americans of all political persuasions, Americans of all ethnicities, is that they were all pretty pessimistic. They did not think the country was going in the right direction. Well, now, interesting, the mood in the U.S. has ticked up a little bit because of these lower gas prices. And American satisfaction with the way things are going is back to where it was in April before gas prices pushed this, the measure to record lows, meaning the measure of how optimistic you were about the future. So I would think that politically, it helps Biden and the Democrats ahead of the midterms. But even with the recent brightening, satisfaction has averaged 18% so far this year, putting it on pace to rank among the lowest yearly averages, along with 1979, 2008, and 2011. And we all remember what happened in each of those years. The historical average, as measured by Gallup, since they first asked the question in 1979, is 36%, but it's also been significantly less than that since 2006. So there's that. All right. 800-848-9222. The other interesting article I wanted to bring to your attention is I read the Marshall Project. I don't know if you're familiar with the Marshall Project. It's a newsletter, essentially, and a website that deals with criminal justice issues. And I read this article by Eric Borsuk, who I don't think he's still in prison. I believe he's out of prison, but he went to prison. And the headline of the article was "The Art of Bidding, or How I Survived Federal Prison." And this is what he writes. And I'm not going to read the whole article, but I'll read a portion of it. "The first time I heard someone use the term bid was on my first day in federal prison, just 4 days before my 21st birthday. It was after the intake process, after I was fingerprinted, strip searched, photographs, and given an inmate ID card, an orange jumpsuit, and a roll of bedding. Before any of this, I'd been instructed by my pre-sentencing probation officer that I could bring absolutely nothing with me to prison, just your body," he'd said. So he left his eyeglasses home, assuming that he'd be issued a new pair. He walked blindly through a labyrinth of buzzing steel doors deeper and deeper into the compound. When he asked about receiving a pair of glasses, one of the guards told him he'd have to wait until next year, since the eye doctor only came around once a year and he'd just recently visited. So he said, this is what he writes, "Shuffling down the blurry corridor in my cheap prison-issued slippers, also known as Bruce Lee's, I was eventually handed off to a nearly identical stout bald guard at E Unit. He unlocked the heavy door using an old steel key like a cliched prison movie scene. Everyone stared at me, the fresh meat, as he led me through the unit to my cell down the bleak concrete hallway. It was hard to fully comprehend that this was my new existence, my home for the next 7 years. Once the guard was gone, a few guys cornered me in my cell and demanded to see my paperwork, the documents new arrivals receive, which detail their criminal charges." This is prison's version of a welcome party, which shows up mostly just to find out if you're a pedophile. "And this task is usually carried out by a group of guys from one's hometown, which is easy to learn since the last three digits of your ID number indicate which district court handled your case." So that's interesting. I actually, for all the time that I've spent visiting prisons and talking to prisoners, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So then he goes on and on and on. It's a good article. Maybe I'll share it on Facebook, facebook.com/MoranoFan. He writes, "Most new guys just end up lying in bed on their first day. The bunk becomes a sanctuary, a safe space where they hide from others, as well as a new reality, as if you could just go to sleep and one day wake up and suddenly everything will be back to normal. After watching me lie in bed all day, my cellie, a skinny middle-aged dude from Detroit, tried to offer some words of encouragement. 'Man, you got to get a bid,' he said. 'What's that?' 'You know, a bid. It's how you do your time.' We went back and forth on the details. It seemed like an arcane term that didn't really make sense until you'd lived in the system for a while. But from what I could gather, the word seemed to derive from the noun bit, pertaining to the length of a prison sentence, much like a stretch or a stint, something like that. This 7-year bit is an effing bummer. Bid was something entirely different. More like a purpose or a raison d'etre. It was all about how you did your time, like finding a hobby or hustle to get you through your bit. For many guys, it was about winning, no matter what the endeavor was. Others just wanted to make money. Some guys used it simply to occupy their minds. For everyone, though, it was all about escaping the slog of captivity. My cellie told me he bid off a lot of things, but mostly just gambling. Although he did like to dabble in some prison hooch from time to time, he said, 'If I could find this thing, this sense of purpose, it would make all the difference in my life. Without it,' he said, my sentence would feel like endless misery. Quote, do the time, don't let the time do you. All across the compound, there were countless ways of bidding, from gambling to religion, education to gang life, sex, art, and prison jobs. The average prisoner only made about 10 to 50 cents per hour. Sports were a popular way to bid. Sometimes nearly the entire compound would come out for basketball games between cell blocks with stakes high enough that the court would be encircled by guys shouting and cheering and spilling onto the court itself. You rooted for your cell block no matter what, and over time couldn't help but develop an allegiance to it. Weightlifting was popular. All sorts of other things like that. Cooking, making homemade cooking. Some guys bid off in gambling on the games, basketball, softball, soccer. A bunch of other things. So it got me thinking, if I was sent to prison, what would my bid be? And I'm curious if you've given this some thought. If you got sent to prison, what would your bid be? What would you do to pass your time? Now, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, even before this article, and this article forced me to think about it even more. And the three things that I've come up with are I would catch up on a lot of reading. I currently have an enormous amount of books, and I'm adding to this book collection on almost a daily basis. And I have more books than I can read in a lifetime, as it stands now, under my current. First of all, I haven't been able to finish any books lately, which kills me because I used to really enjoy reading. But my whole day is just packed. And whether it's working or driving to work or looking after Carmine or trying to sleep or whatever the case may be, I have very little time to read. So I would spend a lot of time reading. And why I don't pretend to be a great softball player or a great ping pong player, I do enjoy both of those things. So I would try to spend a lot of time playing softball or playing ping pong, both of those. Although my friend Tommy Gioli, he got injured, broke his knee playing ping pong because there was a puddle that the prison officials refused to take care of. So even that you had to be careful with. But those are the three things that most immediately come to mind for me is I would do some reading, maybe some writing. There's always a lot of letters that need to be written, and some softball and some ping pong. Curious what you would do. What would your prison bid be? How would you spend your time? 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Matt Blaze, what about you? You ever think about this?
I was in conversation with Alex about other show-related things.
What were the other show-related things?
About what we're going to do later for the show.
Interesting. What are you going to do later for the show?
Well, that's a secret. Can't let everything out of the
my
bag.
Goodness. All right, 800-848-9222. I'm curious what your prison bid would be. How would you spend your time in prison? I'd love to hear your ideas straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Toaster. My ambitions are too high.
This is Selena Gomez, who I'm now a fan of. I'm a Selenator, and a great song, Rare. Interesting thing about this song. In the year 2020, to what's today, at least on the East Coast, today is September 30th. In the year 2020, this song was the 30th most popular song of the year. And so was the song Fireflies by Owl City that we played earlier. That was from the 30th most popular song of 2010. So aside from that Ian song that we played in the first break, we're trying to play all of the songs over the last, you know, few decades that were number 30 in the year that they were released. And this song by Selena Gomez was the 30th most popular song in the year 2020. So that's one of the many reasons that we're playing this song. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. If you want to email me, you can at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. I'm curious, if you went to prison, what your prison bid would be. How would you pass the time? Because as that cellmate told this fella, Eric, he said, if you don't do the time, you have to do the time so the time doesn't do you. What would you do? 800-848-9222. My big three: reading, softball, ping pong. And I'm sure do some gambling as well. And if you've been to prison, I know we have a lot of listeners that have been to prison. If you've been to prison, what did you do to pass the time? Alan is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Alan.
Yes, Frank. I've been to prison. And first of all, reading is big. You know, I read a lot of books. You know, couldn't get enough of them. And then other than that, I did a lot of kitchen work. You know, I did, all the shifts I could do in the kitchen. And by doing that, it was also a hustle. You know, sometimes you bring back stuff that people need and, you know, you get paid for it in commissary and stuff like that. So it was a bit of a hustle. I spent my time doing that. And then other than that, working out in the yard any chance I could get.
And how long were you in prison for, Alan?
2 years.
2 years. Okay, so it wasn't an insurmountable sentence. And you found that the combination of working in the kitchen, working out in the yard, and reading, did you find that it really did help pass the time?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It kept you busy, and, you know, every day just went by, you know, with that schedule, kind of, so to say.
What did some of the other guys do? What were some of the other things people did to pass the time?
Well, either people got jobs usually to pass times, or others got no jobs, and they just basically, they were full time, maybe you could say gamblers, or, you know, they just watched TV and did nothing, you know, just idly, you know, did nothing, you know, really just, you know, watch TV and, you know, just wasted their time doing nothing, didn't read or nothing, just, you know, just sat in the day room.
Yeah. How was radio big in the prison that you were at?
Oh, huge. Radio's huge. Basically everybody buys or gets a radio, even starting from, you know, Rikers Island. You know, you get, they call it a whip, your car. So it's, you start radio in the county, but yeah, you know, radio is very big in having a radio. And, so, I mean, everybody has a radio, and you use that, you know, because always the day room's not open, the TV's not always available, or there's lockdowns in your cell. So, you know, the only form of entertainment or whatever you can have is radio.
Interesting.
My one little problem is because I love talk radio, the AM doesn't come in so well in the country up there. So it's kind of rough.
Well, I can imagine. Hey, Alan, I hope you're doing well now. I appreciate you calling. Appreciate you sharing your perspective.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. Steve in New Jersey. How about you? Steve.
Steve. Hello?
Steve, go ahead. Be heard.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Gene, Frank.
But, Gene. Yeah, okay. You got Kenneth. It happens.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I actually been to prison myself. I just came home last year in May. The way I did my time was I was, let's just say, fortunate enough to actually have access to a phone. So I did a lot of Zoom calls, educated myself, so I could just come home and be a little bit more marketable. I went to school for, believe it or not, carpentry, electrical. Then when I came home, I did all the hands-on stuff. A whole lot of reading. I read more than I ever did in my whole life in prison.
Yeah, that's what, not that I would look forward to going to prison, but if I did go to prison, that's the thing that I would look forward to the most, is having the time to read. Is that an unreasonable expectation on my part?
No, no, it actually takes you away. Like, the books become movies. Like, it's crazy. No matter what you read, you can pick up anything. Like, I remember it was a time where I couldn't find any books. So I was just reading pamphlets. Anything I could find, I was reading. Old stuff people left in a cell, half torn out books. I don't know, it just became a thing. That and working out, just taking care of your body.
How long long were you away for?
I was away for 2.5 years. 2.5 years. It was my first time actually going through something like that. But I passed the time. I blinked and it was over.
Really? So your two big things, you were reading and working out. Those were the two for you.
Yeah, and I came home doing the same stuff.
Yeah, well, that's great. Right. And it helped, I'm sure, that you had access to that phone. That gave you sort of a portal to a lot of other things.
Yeah. Believe it or not, it's way it's so easy to have access to a phone.
Oh, no, I believe it.
Just like regular people.
I believe it. Hey, Steve, I hope you're doing well now. Thanks for listening and calling.
Have a good one.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. You know, if people want to call in, by the way, I'm not going to ask them what they were in prison for. I feel like that's kind of rude. If people want to call in and volunteer what they were in prison for, they can add that. But, you know, I feel like usually if you end up in prison and then you're out of prison, you know, chances are that's not a time in your life where things were going really well. And it might not be a time that you look to relive every significant thing that led you down that path. So I'm not gonna belabor the point. BD is in Manhattan. Hello, BD.
Hey, how are you, Frank? Thank you. I actually have thought about it because I did go through a terrible experience where I almost went in for 7 years. Mm. Fortunately, by the grace of God, I did not. The truth was revealed and I was saved from it. However, the thing that I did think I would do would be utilize the benefits that I cannot afford to do on the outside. The first thing being go back to school, get the master's, get the PhD. I mean, that's what I would do if I had to go in there for those 7 years. And I would, you know, totally utilize that experience because the education, you know, is free. I wouldn't have to pay for it like I do now. And I would focus on the Bible. I would concentrate and read scripture over and over again. I would try to go to a Bible study class. So I just focus on putting God first before all things and, you know, getting my education to the height that I've always wanted it to be. And then hopefully live to be able to come out and utilize it according to God's will. That's what I would do.
Well, I think that's great. I think that's a really healthy attitude, both in prison and outside of prison. So good for you, BD. I'm glad you didn't end up in prison. I hope you stay out.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. Likewise. Thanks for calling. 800-848-9222. Brian is in Denver. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Frank. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks.
During my stay in prison, after I was allowed out of solitary, the hole, I spent as much time as possible playing chess and checkers with other inmates, trying to learn as much as I could about them, their psychology, and their stories, to try to learn something while I was stuck there. And you have a good night.
And how long were you in?
About 7 months.
And did you find that you were among one of the better chess players, one of the worst chess players, or about average? How did your chess skills compare to the other inmates?
Oh, I was the best.
The best?
I was also a rap producer, a jailhouse lawyer, because I was able to build a good rapport with the other inmates, when one looked at me, you would think I would have had a much worse experience. But the other inmates trusted me, and so I was able to learn about their psychology and really dig into how they wound up there to see if I could learn from it and maybe use that knowledge one day to make the world a better place with that knowledge.
Well, that's great. That's great, Brian. I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad you weren't cheating at chess like Hans Niemann may have been doing with his anal beads, because I can imagine people in prison wouldn't take well to cheating at chess. You know, it's funny. After listening to everybody, and if you want to weigh in, you can, 800-848-9222. I'm frequently asked by people that love to cast judgments at others. I'm always asked by people, hey, why do you have so many friends that are convicted felons? Why do you have so many friends that have been in prison? And my answer, especially after talking with everyone I just spoke to, is what it's always been, which is, in my experience, the people that have been to prison are so much more interesting than the rest of the world. They really are. They have such not only a unique perspective from having been to prison, but the kind of stories that they have from being in prison, the stories that they have from the events that led them to prison, the time that they've had to think being in prison. I'm not being shticky or anything like that. I really do find that the people that have been to prison are much more interesting than the general population. I mean that. Sincerely, 800-848-9222. We got denunciations coming up in about 20 minutes. And then in about 2 hours, we're going to chat with Martha Byrne about her husband, who is he was a decorated NYPD sergeant. He's now in prison. So we'll get into that. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can do so at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. I just linked to this article about this fella that talked about how he found his prison bid. I just linked to that on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. Let me take a quick break, and we'll continue with your calls in just a bit. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Two to Make It Right by Seduction, which in 1990 was the 30th most popular song in the entire country. It is September 30th, so we figured we'd pay tribute to not the best songs of any given year, but the 30th best song of any given year. 800-848-9222. We'll continue with your calls in just a moment. It is interesting. Yesterday was a big day in the Morano household, because our cat Melchizedek needed to go to the veterinarian. And this is a cat that is very temperamental. This is a cat that is tough, is strong, is fiery, is very stubborn, very set in his ways, and very difficult to get in his cat carrier. So I was bracing myself when I got home this morning for a rough morning, because obviously I can't go to bed until Rachel is able to get him in his cat carrier. So it was up to me to entertain and take care of our son while my wife went to great lengths to get this cat in the cat carrier. And lo and behold, there was some drama early on. She had to get, we have three cats in all. there was some drama early on in that one cat had to be locked in Carmine's room. One cat had to be locked in our bedroom. And the other cat, my wife had to lure into her office. And he knew something was up. He didn't want to be tricked. Ultimately, my wife got him into our office, got into her office. She douses the cat carrier with all sorts of pheromones, drenches it in pheromones. She closes the door to her office. Carmine and I are on the outside, and we're just waiting. We're just waiting for some chaos to ensue. Lo and behold, my wife emerges from her office. This is after less than an hour of this whole thing. And no exaggeration, it's taken us sometimes days to get him into his cat carrier. After less than an hour, my wife was able to get Melchizedek into his cat carrier.
Wow.
And a big day as well, because our son took a two-hour nap, which actually might have been a two-and-a-half-hour nap, which gave her an opportunity to get work done, which was for the best because that means I got to sleep a little bit. And I got to then do some work when before I had to leave to see Tony Danza. And then ultimately, he's at the veterinarian. My wife gets the call that we knew he had to have some teeth removed. And he had to have some blood work done because he's lost some weight. He's lost about 2 pounds. And this was the cat that we had on insulin because we thought he was diabetic. And then they found that he's not diabetic any longer, and we stopped giving him insulin. But my wife was concerned because of the weight loss. So the veterinarian calls my wife and says that they removed three teeth. I don't remember which ones. I think, well, whatever, three teeth, and they were really badly infected. And the veterinarian said that he was already missing 14 teeth he was missing before they removed these three. So he had, I think the last time he got teeth extracted at another vet, I think he had another, maybe another 4 or 5 teeth removed. So that means there's 9 teeth basically that were unaccounted for. We don't know what happened to those other 9 teeth. So anyway, cats have 30 teeth, and now he has had 17 teeth either fall out or be missing. And so my wife was very concerned. She felt bad for him. She considers Melchizedek her firstborn. She had him before our son. She had him before I was in her life. And she's very, very close to this cat. And I am too. Not as close as she is, but she was very concerned. She felt bad. And the vet's consoling her. He said to her that, no, you know, it's going to be better for him. He was probably in so much pain. Probably a lot of pain whenever he ate. His teeth were so infected. And the veterinarian told her what he was probably doing is not even chewing his food, probably just swallowing it whole because he was probably in so much pain because of these teeth. And my wife told me, she said, you know, I think he's right. I think that's what he was doing because I, whenever I would clean it, whatever she was telling me, whenever I'd clean up his vomit, she would see that it was unchewed. That he would just cough up the cat food unchewed. It's kind of gross, but that's what he would do. So hopefully, my wife feels bad that he's got so few teeth now, but we are hoping that this will lead to him having a much healthier life. And the veterinarian theorized that part of the reason for the weight loss, it's going to take us a couple of days on the blood work, but she theorized that part of the reason for the weight loss was that he was in so much pain while eating that maybe he wasn't really eating that much. And because he was swallowing all this food whole, that maybe that was leading him to vomit more of the food than he properly should be. So that was the situation when I left. And we were surprised that the vet bill was not $3,000. My wife was all set. She was ready to pay $3,000. It ended up being only $900. So it was very interesting. Only when it comes to vet bills can you get charged $900 and think you're getting something of a deal. So that was the case. And then my wife has been feeding these cats outside of her house. She puts out cat food, a bowl and some water for these outdoor feral cats that, you know, hang out outside. And they come by our house, they'll eat the cat food, drink the water, and move on. And so we noticed that there could be multiple cats doing it. We think there's two. That at least one of the cats didn't have their ear clipped. And if they don't have their ear clipped, that means they're not fixed. So my wife decided to put out a cat trap. So when I left last night, she put out not only the food, but she put out a trap with tuna in it. And around just about a half hour before our show started, just about 3 hours ago, I see my wife, because we have these Ring cameras, and I see her outside at way past her bedtime doing something. And I said to her, because you could speak to her through the camera, I said, honey, what are you doing outside at this time? And she said, there's a cat in there. A cat was trapped. So she was successful in luring this cat that needs to be fixed into the trap with the tuna. And so she put him in our garage with a blanket over the trap so he doesn't freak out. You got food in there and stuff. So I think the plan is later today, she's going to take that cat to be fixed. So that's all our cat drama. Picking up one cat from the veterinarian, getting his teeth removed, paying the vet bill, trapping this other cat, and hopefully getting him or her, I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, getting or non-binary, getting that cat fixed today. So we'll see where that goes. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. Paul is in Westwood. Hello, Paul.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Not much. I dropped my phone. Hold on. Where did it go? Oh, I was in jail. I'll tell you, it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
How long were you there for?
4 years.
Why was it the best thing that ever happened to you?
I just gotten divorced after 18 years. Wife cheated on me, lost everything. Mm. That's got, you know, with these people, which I shouldn't have. And it was just drugs, you know, like not major drugs. I just, you know, but they hammered me. They gave me 4 years. I took it, but I went in there like, you when you have nothing, then you get in a fight in jail. They charge you and
let you go. Cause all right. Well, that is interesting. I wonder if there's a way to use those same that same ability to reflect and to think that Paul benefited from in prison without having to go to prison. I mean, you'd hate to send everybody to prison just so they could think of it. Catholics, and I'm sure other religions as well, but Catholics are very big into the idea of a retreat, right, where you get away from it all and just do some praying. And I think this is part of the idea of no work on the Sabbath and no electronic on the Sabbath. And I have found that when I abstain from electronics after 10 a.m. on Saturday, that I have an opportunity to do some thinking as well. Not the kind of serious introspection that it sounds like Paul was doing. But it is interesting. Juliana is in Connecticut. Hello, Juliana.
Hi. First thing I want to say is about the woman that said she could go back to school and get her degrees and whatnot. Prisons don't offer anything like that. When I was last in, they closed the library, the haircut. You couldn't even find a book if you wanted to. They just make you sit in a cell all day.
Some prisons do offer, remedial education courses and things like that. I think it's pretty rare.
You have to be a lifer.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty rare to find a prison that would offer a PhD program. But go ahead, Juliana, tell me about your experience.
I went for 5.5, basically. I was driving without my license, and every time I got back out, I kept doing it. And I had one cop that just kept following me. And it was 3 times. The first time I did 30, then I did, it was 4 times. I did a year, then I did 18 months, and my last one was 2.5.
All for driving without a license? That sounds high.
Yeah. Well, 30 days was my first one, like I said. The second time it was a year. Third time was 18 months. The fourth time was 2.5. So I got to experience everything from parole to, living in a halfway house, all of that good stuff. But basically, in the women's prisons, they don't offer anything.
Well, so what did you do to pass the time, Juliana?
Like you said, a lot of hustling. And I didn't need money, but it was just fun to do. And I learned how to play every card game there was and bet and gamble and all that kind of stuff. Crochet was very big. You could sell whatever you made. They offered yarn, and everything was cheap on commissary, so it was easy to do yarn. But basically, just stay out of fighting is what you got to do, Don't get in fights.
What's your favorite card game?
Spades.
Spades.
I like to play on the outside. Yep.
Spades is fun. Juliana, maybe I'll see you in a casino sometime. You could teach me a thing or two.
Probably will. Talk to you later.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Cece in Brooklyn. Hello, Cece.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call. I actually bounced between your station and the station you mentioned earlier, the coast station with George Norrie and all. I bounced between the two, so you broke that up just now. Thanks a lot, man. The point of the prison thing, two scenarios I give you. Somebody that you probably remember him by name, Jason Williams, the basketball player.
Sure,
you might remember.
Sure, of course,
yeah.
From the Nets.
And he talked about prison, and he said, bad as it was, he said it was the best thing he had done in his life. You know that?
I'm not surprised. I've heard that from a lot of people, And I'm just wondering, right. Have you been to prison, Cece?
Oh, no, I hadn't been. No. I just, people who've been there. But that story he told, and that was a wake-up, something to pay attention to, It turned him around,
Yeah.
His life was already good. He had the pro basketball, but I guess he got too relaxed, did whatever he wanted. Because you remember, he cost somebody their life,
yep,
and he went to prison. He said it was the best thing, So that one, a bad thing turned out good for him. But somebody else that I knew one-on-one went to prison, and it was a good thing for him because, like you with the books and everything, he went to prison and he studied. And he got into the printing. And for all that he did and it upbuilt him and all, it turned out to be a bad thing for him.
Well, what happened?
When he got out of prison, while he studied printing. But he said that when he got out, he came to find out that all that time that he put in there and he kept up his character and kept things good, he gets out and he finds out that the books that they were teaching him from them, the work that he was doing, that thing had been so outdated that he couldn't get a job in the career.
Interesting. I didn't know that. That's interesting to hear. Thank you. CC 800-848-9222. Mike is in Detroit, the land of Motown. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Frank. It's Mike Porcelli. I'm in Detroit.
Oh, what are you doing in Detroit?
I'm going for some advanced training on electric cars.
Okay, all right.
I was getting you on my car radio until you got stepped on by the local stations.
Well, you got while you're in Detroit, you got to get one of those stations in Detroit to carry our show out there.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. But relative to what your last caller mentioned about learning a trade, I would suggest that half the people in prison are there because they didn't have a training programs in prisons. I would suggest that if people in prison took advantage of learning a good trade, when they get out, they can make twice as much money as the people that put them in prison.
Mike, that is a great suggestion. And you broke up a little bit there, but I think the totality of what you were saying was that, if you learn a trade before you go to prison, you can make some money and not have to, resort to the kind of negative or destructive behavior that lands you in prison. Mike, thanks. Good luck in Detroit. Give me a buzz when you get back.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. 800-848-9222. Baina has been holding for a while. Let me say hello to Baina. Hello, Baina.
Yes, hi, Frank. It's Baina Patrice X. I just wanted to make a brief statement, a political statement about the prison. But before that, I'm a scientist and I have a lot of training in science. You got to be careful, you and your wife, especially with the baby, because those feral cats and even a domestic cat can get the fleas. and the fleas can get on you, Frank, God forbid, your wife, and even the baby, you know? So we have to be careful with those nice cats, you know?
No, it's a great word to keep in mind. What else did you want to add, yeah. Baina?
Sure. Just briefly, and again, it's Baina Patrice X. In the prisons now, Frank, as you probably know, you know, being in politics and being very wise, as you are, about politics, the prisoners, when they get out, and even I think before they get out, they can vote. So, you know, persons who are becoming politicians, they should know that if they become a politician, that the prisoners, whether they're in or out, they will be able to vote also.
Baina Patrice X, thank you very much. The rules do vary from state to state. Most states don't allow you to vote in prison after you've been convicted. Before you can be convicted, you can. Until then, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Thanks for tuning in. It's Friday. It is Friday. TGIF. If it's Friday, you know what that means. That means it is time for me to call out those that need some calling out. It's been a week, but it is once again time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents denunciations.
Oh, that's right. A number of people that need to be denounced this particular week. You know, I'm not going to make that a formal denunciation. I was wavering, but I'm going to bring something to your attention a little later. I'll let you be the judge in terms of whether or not that deserves formal denunciation status or not. Stay tuned for that in about 15 minutes. I'll bring that to your attention. All right, I must begin with the House Republicans. The House Republican Conference thought their agenda was quoting Abraham Lincoln. It was actually quoting a Lehman Brothers ad from the 1980s. So Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, was rolling out their new platform. And I agree with Tucker Carlson that really it's kind of a whole lot of feel-good stuff, a lot of nothing, the commitment to America. And they included a quote attributed to Lincoln. This is what Kevin McCarthy said. Commitment is what transforms a promise into reality. Now, again, they're calling their whole agenda the commitment to America. So a great Lincoln quote, first Republican president, that would be great. The problem is Lincoln didn't say that. Now, you'd think if you're going to quote Lincoln, wouldn't you double check to make sure Lincoln didn't say it? So the quote appears often attributed to Lincoln on social media, but a review of historical records turned up no proof that Lincoln had ever said it, but it was used in a Lehman Brothers ad in 1986 in the Wall Street Journal. So, guys, get your Lincoln quotes straight. I want to denounce. So, Minority Leader McCarthy, I do denounce you. I must also denounce a former congressman by the name, this one a Democrat, by the name of Michael Ozzie Myers. Does that same name sound familiar with you? Anybody? Anybody recognize that name? Anyone? Well, you probably do recognize that name if you're over the age of, I'll say, 50, because then Congressman Michael Myers, not the Halloween villain, not the star of Austin Powers, but the congressman, Democrat from Pennsylvania, he was expelled from Congress back in 1980 for taking a bribe in the FBI abscam case. He went to prison for 2.5 years for abscam, taking bribes from FBI agents. And now this former congressman, you'd think if you're a corrupt politician and you get caught with something like that, you would do like Paul in Westwood or any of these other guys, and you would use this as an opportunity to turn your life around. You'd think you'd lead a monastic existence from then on. All the gifts that God has given you, clearly the guy's a smart guy. Well, all evidence to the contrary in the story I'm about to share with you. Speaks well, knows the law, knows how to make laws, clearly knows how to count money. Well, now, former Congressman Myers is going back to prison because he actually was involved in this ballot stuffing operation in Philadelphia. He's admitted to this, and he worked with election officials to pad the vote tallies of his political consulting clients who were running for city judgeships. He's admitted to this, and the judge asked him, when he sentenced him, did you learn nothing from this? So Myers would solicit payments from his clients in the form of cash or checks as consulting fees, and then use portions of these fees to pay election officials to tamper with the election results. So, Congressman Myers, off to prison with you. I do denounce you. I must denounce Amber Rose Barnes of Montana. She proudly posted a photo on Facebook of herself posing and smiling with the... I don't know where they find these people. With the corpse of a dog that she had murdered in the woods and skinned. She killed something that she thought was a baby wolf and flaunted the dead, mangled body of her victim for all the world to see. Now, by all accounts, this was not a baby wolf. She killed a husky. Now, she claimed that she killed this animal in self-defense. I am absolutely not buying it, because I don't think she would have skinned it afterwards. She was well-equipped with a loud weapon and other hunting gear to scare a dog or a wolf away if she felt threatened. I think that she killed this dog in cold blood, because in her first post, she refers to the war on wolves in Montana, which saw hunters kill at least 273 gray wolves last year, and she doesn't mention being afraid for her life. Well, whether it was a wolf, a baby wolf, as she said, or a husky, Amber Rose Barnes killed and skinned this animal and paraded it on social media like a trophy. And to me, that is just reprehensible. I do denounce you. I must also denounce Ramon Calzada Ruzette and Jamie Ray Wilson. I don't know where they find these two winners, but these people are really just horrible people. Both of these people were... this is a St. Paul, Minnesota woman and her boyfriend. They tortured two of her relatives who were children. So they're being prosecuted for child torture of a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. A 5-year-old girl and her 2-year-old brother were beaten and burned over several days at the hands of their aunt and her boyfriend. I cannot imagine this. You know, I am not a big believer in sending a lot of people to prison. These are exactly the type of people that belong in prison. I mean, I think prison should really be reserved for folks that, if they're out there in society among us, are going to hurt people. And clearly, these are not people that have any business in organized society. So Ramon Calzada Rosette and Jamie Ray Wilson, I do denounce you. I must also denounce ultra-processed foods. Yes, they may be tasty. They may be foods that we eat every day, but the more research that comes out about these ultra-processed foods, they are almost the worst thing that you can eat. They're linked with all sorts of chronic diseases and higher risk of early death. These foods represent an increasingly large share of the world's diet. Almost 60% of the calories that adults in America eat are from ultra-processed foods. And this is not something that seems to be improving. And it leads to type 2 diabetes. It leads to obesity, heart disease, hypertension, and colon cancer. So stay away from those ultra-processed foods. A lot of the industrial concoctions, you know, stay away from them. Frosted Flakes, Hot Pockets, donuts, hot dogs, cheese crackers, boxed macaroni and cheese. Those are all examples of ultra-processed foods. They're loaded with preservatives. They're really bad for you. And I do denounce them. I must also denounce Gulfport, Mississippi, M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I. Gulfport, Mississippi is the worst city in the entire country for people with disabilities. According to the findings of a new report, the personal finance website WalletHub compared more than 180 U.S. cities across 34 key indicators of disability friendliness, including wheelchair accessible facilities per capita, the rate of workers with disabilities, and the quality of public hospital systems to determine the best and worst U.S. cities for people with disabilities. And lo and behold, Gulfport, Mississippi was dead last in terms of being friendly for people with disabilities. So if you're disabled, stay out of Gulfport, Mississippi. For those of you in Gulfport, Mississippi, I do denounce you. I must also denounce the people that are looting in the midst of this hurricane. I just am perpetually, simultaneously astonished and not surprised at all that this happens whenever there's one of these serious hurricanes. Officials from Lee County, where Ian made landfall as a Category 4 hurricane, announced a curfew on Wednesday. Officials noted during a press conference that they're also coordinating plans to help residents and will dispatch first responders. And lo and behold, this is one of these people, this is one of these places where there was all sorts of looting. Looting and other crimes as well. So, I just don't understand it. I mean, you got to be a really reprehensible person to use the occasion of a life-threatening hurricane to go out and steal from people and loot. So for those of you that are hurricane looters, I do denounce you. And finally, I must denounce the Miami Dolphins. They played last night, and what happened was this. The quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, everyone calls him Tua. I believe his last name is pronounced Tagovailoa. Tua Tagovailoa suffered a concussion last week. He should absolutely not have been playing in this game last night. And everyone in the world called this out before the game. Well, the Dolphins played him. And he was slammed to the turf by another player. And he had to leave the game on a stretcher. He was placed on a backboard and had to leave the game on a stretcher. Every neuroscientist in the world, appropriately so, called the Dolphins out on this. Chris Nowinski, who's with the Concussion Legacy Foundation, he's the co-founder of that. He's also a neuroscientist. 3 hours before kickoff, Nowinski warned that he shouldn't play. If Tua takes the field tonight, it's a massive step back for concussion care in the NFL. This is what he tweeted. If he has a second concussion that destroys his season or career, everyone involved will be sued and should lose their jobs, coaches included. We all saw it, even they must know this isn't right. Shortly after Tagovailoa's injury, Nowinski took no pleasure in being right. Instead, he told people to get angry. Tagovailoa sustained neck and head injuries and was taken to a hospital for further evaluation. I mean, this is just reprehensible. In my view, this guy is 24 years old. Not only could his season be over, his career could be over. His life could be irreparably damaged because of the selfishness and the greed of the Miami Dolphins. So, Miami Dolphins, I do denounce you. All right. That does it for denunciations for today. If you want to comment on anyone I have denounced, you're welcome to call in at 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Putting on the Ritz, putting on the Ritz, putting on the Ritz, putting on the Ritz, putting on the Ritz. Have you seen the well-to-do up and down Park Avenue on that famous thoroughfare? With their noses in the air, high hats and arrow collars, white spats and lots of dollars, spending every dime for a wonderful time. Now if you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on Ritz.
This is Fred Astaire.
Different types who wear a day coat.
Pants with stripes or cutaway coat. Perfect fits. Putting on the Ritz. This Fred Astaire singing Putting on the Ritz. Not singing it as well as Gene Wilder and Peter Boyle do in Young Frankenstein, am I right? But singing it quite well. This song was, believe it or not, the 30th most popular song in the year 1940, I believe. Yeah. There was a lot of different versions of this song, but that was the version that was the 30th most popular song. It might have been 1930. 800-848-9222. Hey, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think a lot of people, just about everybody knows who Arnold Schwarzenegger is, right? One of the biggest stars on the planet. Started out as a big star in the world of bodybuilding, made the transition. And again, whatever you might think about Arnold Schwarzenegger, I happen to give a lot of credit whenever people are able to make a career transition successfully that way. Whether you go from, you know, like a guy like The Rock, to go from the world of pro wrestling, first of all, go to football, to pro wrestling, and then to the world of movies. Now he's the biggest star in the world. Arnold Schwarzenegger, same thing. The guy had a remarkable amount of success as a bodybuilder, one of the top bodybuilders in the world, had a remarkable amount of success as an actor, then on a huge, tremendous amount of success as a businessman, and a real estate developer, and then a lot of success in the world of politics, two-term governor of California. So whatever you might think of Schwarzenegger, I always give him a lot of credit for being able to do that, being able to make that sort of career transition. I'm not getting into his politics or anything like that, but 75 years old, and he visited the Holocaust Museum at Auschwitz, the Auschwitz Museum in Poland, and he signed the guest book. You know, the guest book, you sign your name, short little message, or most people I would think would write something like never forget or always remember, whatever. Just something solemn and appropriate. Maybe you just write your name. Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger had an interesting little line that he wrote when he wrote his name, when he signed it in the guest book. Instead of just writing Arnold Schwarzenegger, Arnold Schwarzenegger wrote,
"I'll be back.
That's what he wrote in the guest book at the Holocaust Museum. He wrote, "I'll be back." So do you think that's inappropriate? 800-848-9222. I don't know how I feel about it, I have to say, because there were first of all, at least he was going to this Holocaust Museum. He said he was going there to raise awareness about hate and intolerance and things of that nature. And that's a good thing. So because I don't like what he wrote, I don't know. So I don't want to jump down his throat for that. But a lot of people on Twitter did. People were calling that comment flippant. Another one wrote, not sure that the tone of that was entirely suitable. Curious what you think at 800-848-9222. Do you think it's appropriate for Arnold Schwarzenegger to have written the words? I'll be back.
I'll be back.
So obviously this is something that Arnold Schwarzenegger says in a lot of movies. Probably most famous for saying it in the Terminator films, but he also said it in Last Action Hero. He said it in several films. The Expendables 2, I think he said it in. I think even in Twins he said it in. He said it in a bunch of films. Commando, that's kind of his catchphrase in films. It would be like me writing straight ahead, I guess. So I'm curious what you think of this. Do you think this was inappropriate, or are people making too big of a deal of this? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. The Auschwitz Memorial, the Auschwitz Museum, they defended Schwarzenegger. They said this. They put out a statement because there was so much criticism of this. They put out a statement that said the visit was planned to be relatively short. The inscription was meant to be a promise to return for another and more in-depth visit. So, you know what? I accept that. I accept that. So the Auschwitz Memorial also shared that Schwarzenegger visited the site to honor all the victims of the camp and deepen his knowledge about history that would help him fight against prejudices nowadays. Yeah, I mean, look, Arnold Schwarzenegger obviously was originally Austrian. So Austria had they played a very interesting role in terms of World War II and the Nazis. And if I'm not mistaken, Arnold Schwarzenegger's father actually was, I think he was in the Nazi party. He was a Nazi. So it's all the more reason if your father's a Nazi that you have to go and kind of make a point about saying that you're against what the Nazis did and raising awareness about that. So I don't know. I'm willing to, who am I to be sitting in judgment of anybody? But I don't think there's anything wrong with this. I accept the museum's explanation that this was going to be a short visit and he's going to come back in the future for a more in-depth visit. And again, at least he went.
If the museum is saying it,
yeah,
then right. What's the – I mean,
exactly.
It would have been different if he would have wrote something like, get to the chopper.
Right.
You know, I'll be back.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah, right. Yeah, something like that. But saying I'll be back, my first question was like, well, will he be back?
Yeah.
He's saying he'll be back. It's not that bad.
800-848-9222. Steve's on the Upper East Side. What do you think, Steve?
Yes, I think it's an abomination. I think the Jewish population should be outraged and should be banned from Hollywood.
Well, a lot of people are pretty outraged.
The reason why it's so outraged, my cousin works in Hollywood, and he's Jewish, and he works in entertainment business. And I talk to him, he lives in California, and this is anti-Semitism exploding everywhere. You know, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, it should be. I mean, the ADL has nothing to say about it. I mean, Andy should definitely, what's his name? So, I mean, who runs it now, I forgot the name of the guy, but organization. So basically, I think, there's organizations like Chabad and other organizations, you know, I mean, this is outrage, I think. Bill Maher was talking about this situation on the show, Real Time with Bill Maher. And he says that, there's not including Jews in this new museum that doesn't recognize Jews as the founders of Hollywood. You know?
Yeah, I did not see Bill Maher's comments on that, but I did follow this whole story. What about the explanation from the museum, Steve, that this was meant to be a short visit, and his comment is indication that he's going to be back for a more in-depth visit in the future?
Well, that's an interesting point. He actually was covered on broadcast TV. His family were Nazis on ABC with yeah. You did mention yourself, and basically, though, there's actually pictures of him doing a Nazi salute as kind of like a joke, which is kind of like very offensive on the internet, because he did the Nazi salute when he was a bodybuilder, and he said, "Oh, Hitler was a great motivational speaker," and he said,
"Thank you, Steve. I'm familiar with his quotes about various things over the years." My goal in bringing this up is not to go back and review every single thing that Arnold Schwarzenegger has ever said, I like to call him Arnold Vlaunschnagger from that line of dialogue in Last Action Hero, which I think is very funny. But, it's about this specific incident. I remember when Justin Bieber, this is years ago, more than 10 years ago, Justin Bieber, who was a very young superstar at the time, you know, they call the fans of Justin Bieber, they call them Beliebers, right? And so Justin Bieber signed the guest book at Anne Frank's house. You know, Anne Frank, who obviously died as a child in the Holocaust. And he said something to the effect of, "I'd like to think, so sorry to hear what happened to Anne. I'd like to think she would have been a Belieber." I thought that was really inappropriate. But again, I was willing to cut him some slack because he was a kid. You know, I mean, you always do dopey things when you're young, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger at 75 years old, he doesn't get to plead the immaturity card, right? But I can understand why people are irked by it, but my view is this is not a big deal. But I can understand why other folks may disagree. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. Interesting thing. I was going to the Tony Danza show last night. My friend Nick got tickets, right? And I was running a little late, hit a lot of traffic. And then I look at my phone. You know that football pool that that I am in each week? You have to get your picks in by 7 o'clock on Thursday. And this woman who runs the pool, Sherry emails me and said, "Where are your picks? Where are your picks?" Now, normally, and she's in Florida, so I can't really reproach her for this. She's probably got no power. She's in the midst of evacuating from one place to another. Normally, if it's 7 o'clock and I don't have my picks in, she will call me and say, "Hey, it's Sherry. You know, you got 5 minutes. Give me your picks." And I got no call, but I saw that she had emailed me that I had to get my picks in. So I'm in the middle of trying to walk to 54 Below, where the Tony Danza thing is, and hurriedly trying to find a way to look at all the games on my phone and also send an email on my phone. And I thought all the picks in, and I found that I, by accident, because I was in such a rush, by accident, I inadvertently picked both Denver and the Raiders, who are playing one another. My intention was to only pick the Raiders. Now, the game's not till Sunday. I really feel like she should let me get my pick in for the Raiders, but she sent the whole sheet out to everybody. I think it's probably too late. So next week, I said I was only going to share with you my picks and my picking methodology on the air if I won this week. But I'm afraid that the only way that I'm going to remember to send in my picks is if I do it on the air. So next week, next Thursday morning, I'm making my football picks on the air so that I don't forget and don't run into a situation. Because now that game doesn't count for me. Now I'm starting the season, or I'm starting the week, down by one already. Can't afford to be down by one. So that's where we are on that. All right. So I did get to see Tony Danza last night, and it was difficult leaving the house early with Carmine and everything. But I have to tell you, he puts on a tremendous show, a really great show. I don't know if there's still tickets available for tonight's performance at 54 Below, but if you get the opportunity to see Tony Danza, the guy is an incredible singer and an incredible storyteller. The way that he weaves songs and stories together, it almost reminds me a little bit of Joe Piscopo, because obviously Joe's an old friend and a close friend, and I have seen his show many times, so I'm very familiar with Joe's show, and this is the first time that I've seen Tony Danza do this stories and songs, stories and standards. And it was really terrific. Not only did my friend Nick came, he bought dinner, which was very nice. I had the scallops. The food was good there. I don't know if you've ever eaten at 54 Below, but it was great. And Donna from Huntington, a regular contributor to this program and one of our most steadfast supporters, she came out as well. So it was great to see her as well. She always always brings a lot to the table. It's great to see her. All right. 800-848-9222. Oh, interestingly, tonight, my wife and I were supposed to go see Come From Away because it's leaving Broadway. Now, my plan was this. My plan was to go to the TKTS booth in Times Square, which you can use to buy half-price tickets that day for that day's shows. It's a great way if you don't have a lot of money but you want to see shows. It's a great way of not paying the exorbitant prices. And Come From Away has been on the TKTS booth. So I have the TKTS app where it says what shows are there. So my plan was this. My plan was we have our morning meeting, which we do after the show on Fridays, get some work done, get a little bit of a nap, and then walk over to Times Square to the TKTS booth and purchase some half-price tickets to Come From Away. Lo and behold, it's not on the half-price board on the TKTS booth today, and it is sold out. So I can get tickets through one of these third parties, like Ticketmaster or SeatGeek. You know what the tickets are going for tonight's show? Including fees, $594 each. So, and they say this on the SeatGeek app. They actually use the phrase, amazing deal. Now, if you're not so concerned with, you know, an amazing deal, you can pay $625 each, which includes $154 in fees. That is for obstructed view. So the show is sold out. The cheapest tickets are $594. So I will not be seeing that show tonight. So I said to my wife, because we had plans with another couple as well, I said, do you want to you want to see something else? You know, do you want to see Hadestown or something else? And I think because we've both been running around like crazy over the weekend and spending money on babysitters and going out to eat and everything, that we actually may stay in tonight, which would be nice. It's when I say in, I mean locally. We may get together with friends in the neighborhood, but I think we both could use a little bit of a break. Tomorrow we're making the trip out to Long Island for my sister-in-law's birthday, and then Sunday I think my sister's coming over on Sunday, so that's my weekend. No show tonight. Post-show meeting, catch up on some work, hopefully get some sleep, and then maybe even squeeze in some racquetball. And then on Saturday, make the trip out to Long Island. So hopefully your weekend is equally as fulfilling. Hey, we'll take your calls in a moment. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Jermaine Jackson. He was part of, this was in 1990, the 30th most popular song in the United States. So we're celebrating, in since it is September 30th, we are celebrating the 30th most popular song.
You just
of
said 19,
1980, I meant to say. I don't remember what happened to that other, the younger guy from the Jackson 5, Michael or something. I don't know whatever became of him. But clearly Jermaine is still thriving. Doesn't sound as good as Frank Diaz, who, when we played his music yesterday, got rave reviews. I must say, I don't want to create any inter-office rivalries, but so far, the reviews for the Frank Diaz song are, from my listeners that I've heard, are a little bit better than the reviews for that Alex Barnard song. So far, that could change. But it could be that maybe just death metal is not necessarily their thing. Alex Barnard not liking that description. But I'm not saying it. The people are.
You want to put it to an actual vote?
I mean, do I
have a side-by-side comparison?
No, let's not do
make that. A Facebook poll?
Yeah, go ahead. You want to take the leadership of that, Kenneth? You want to make a Facebook poll? Yeah, if you want to vote in terms of which song you think is better, you can do so. Just go to the Facebook group, and we'll set up a vote. Search on Facebook, Murano Radio Fans at Native. You know, why not? Can we play both of them real quick? Let's give people 30 seconds of the mass murdering song by Alex Barnard and 30 seconds of No Mass Murder by Frank Diaz.
Let me pull them up.
Okay, yeah, you get that together. Meantime, there was an interesting there's an interesting kind of war of words going back and forth between Tucker Carlson and, well, not really. It's kind of just one direction between Eric Bolling and Tucker Carlson. I'll share that with you in just a bit. And if you want to stay in touch with me, you could certainly do so. I shared that article on Facebook, and you could find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MuranoFan. It's facebook.com/MuranoFan. All right, what music do we have first, Matt?
How you want to do Alex's song first?
Well, whatever. I don't care. Yeah, go. We'll do Alex's song first. Go ahead. Does remind me of that Michael Savage theme song, Master of Puppets, the music part of it. I like it. It feels like Alex's throat hurts when he's singing. Did your throat hurt when you sang this?
Nope, not a bit.
It hurt. My throat hurts.
I have to work that up again. But okay. At the time, it didn't hurt him at all.
You know what I don't get? And I like the song. I do. But you know what I don't get is, you have such a nice voice, right? I talk to you in real life and on the air, and I think your voice is melodious. I think it's delightful, and yet I feel like you make your voice rough and unappealing for this song. Why not just sing the lyrics, as horrible as they are, about, you know, killing people and everything? Why not just sing them in your actual voice rather than this rough affectation?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you like my voice. I appreciate that. That's a high compliment coming from you. I like your voice, too.
Oh.
But it's part of the style.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Okay. Now, let me hear the Frank Diaz song. What is the name of the Frank Diaz song again? It's a cover, so he didn't write this.
It's a cover of Thin Lizzy called Cold Sweat,
all right,
is the song.
So I figure we got to deduct a couple of points because it's not an original song,
right.
But he not only sang it, but he performed all the
instruments. Yes, he did.
Right, so you got to give him maybe another point. So he starts out at -1, right?
Okay,
and let's hear the Frank Diaz song.
Thank you.
See, that's really good. That's really good. What do you think, honestly?
I got to go with Diaz.
You know, again, it's tough. They say you can't really compare artists. They're two very different styles,
yeah.
Right? So it's like comparing the Beatles and Frank Sinatra, right? It's tough.
It's true.
It's a great cover of a great song. I give him that.
I know. That was kind of a left-handed compliment.
No.
Like a smack in the face.
Yeah, right.
No.
Backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
I think it's. He's looking at me.
Diaz
now.
Wants to say something?
Yeah, well, you could come in.
Come in if you want.
Why should Alex doesn't ask anyone's permission to come in? Why should you?
No, I mean I just wave my hands up and you know, like an Italian. No, if we want to make this fair, I do have a number of original songs that I've written.
Well, let's hear some of those.
So I'll send it. I have to send it to.
You got
to
bring those in.
How can people get your songs? Your band is Lesbian Dance Theory, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And where do they search you?
If you go to SoundCloud, you look up Frank Diaz and probably the first one.
Yeah.
That's there.
I actually said yesterday, I think you sound, you're almost the opposite of Alex. I think you sound much better singing than you do doing the news, honestly.
Boy, talk about a backhanded compliment.
No, I'm serious.
That's pretty direct.
Yeah.
I think you can hear the lyrics, right? Frank's song is more to my tastes, right?
Right.
So it's more my style of music.
I think you would like this a lot more also because the song is about gambling, and I know, you know,
that's
your point right there.
It's more to my taste. So if I was going on they used to do a show, Desert Island Discs. I think they still do it in Britain, where you'd have to pick like the songs that you take with you to a desert island. If they gave me a choice of the Frank Diaz song or the Alex Barnard song, I would take the Frank Diaz song because it's more of my style, but I'm not really a death metal guy. So.
Listen, no offense to Frank, but that would be a pretty boring desert island if it was my desert island. You know.
Well, the whole album that Cold Sweat is on is pretty good. There's also the last Thin Lizzy album ever. So,
Very good album. Yes, I agree.
I was going to say, right, like Frank said, they're both two completely different styles.
Right.
But I will say this. I thought both gentlemen killed the guitar.
Yeah,
on their respective songs.
I agree with that. Absolutely.
True.
I agree with that.
Diaz can shred much better than I can, I think. So
yeah.
I'll send Blaze one of my songs in like
please.
5 minutes. Yeah.
Please, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Then we'll set up a proper poll.
Yeah. So who's tasked with setting up the poll?
I'll have to do it in the Facebook group.
Yeah,
I'll set up a proper poll.
Okay. So if you want to vote, go to Facebook, Murano Radio Fans and Haters. Please do not try to rig the vote as former Congressman Michael Ozzy Myers did in Philadelphia. And, it's funny, I tweeted yesterday. And, again, I know I'm being shadow banned on Twitter. I know they don't let my tweets out there. But I tweeted yesterday some analysis from a journalist. And she is a pro-Russian journalist. She doesn't work for the Russian government, but a lot of her commentary sides with Russia. And she talked about how she's observing these elections in these four breakaway regions of Ukraine, and she's not seeing anything about it being a sham, which is what the international press has told us. Now, I don't know. I'm assuming these are sham elections. So don't say I'm defending what they're doing. I'm not. But so I retweeted that her comments that the election was on the level, essentially. And I said, the Ukrainians are claiming that the election is being done using Dominion and Smartmatic voting machines. Now, it was meant to be a joke. I'm not really making a comment about Dominion. I don't want to be sued, but I thought that was kind of fun. Hey, speaking of Russia, there is a war of words going back and forth. Well, one way, actually, between Newsmax host Eric Bolling and Fox News personality Tucker Carlson. Now, both of these guys used to be part of the same network. They both used to be on Fox News. They were colleagues. I don't know if they were friends. I don't really know either of them. I've met both of them, but I don't know either of them. And I was talking, actually, with Jay Diamond as I was driving home yesterday. And, you know, the nice thing about everyone knows that they can reach me between 5 and 6 a.m., usually Fridays are a little different, is it does keep me awake. Right. Talking to all these people on the phone as I'm driving home. I don't have to worry about falling asleep while driving. And Jay said in words of substance, did you hear about, you know, this criticism that Eric Bolling had of Tucker Carlson? And I said, no. What is it about? Russia? And he said, yes. How did you know? Sure enough, that's exactly what it was about. Newsmax host Eric Bolling criticized Tucker Carlson in response to Russian state media using clips from Tucker's show that allegedly show support of Russia's war on Ukraine. This is what, and I'm sorry I didn't get to play this yesterday, but I didn't know about it. I don't watch a lot of cable news. I didn't know about it until Jay brought it to my attention yesterday. Speaking on his show yesterday, Eric Bolling let me let Eric Bolling speak for himself. This is from Newsmax TV yesterday.
Turns out Russia's state media are using clips of Fox News' Tucker Carlson to support Vladimir Putin's war efforts in Ukraine. Look at that right there. See that? That's Russian state media using Tucker Carlson, alleged American, as propaganda their case that Russia is the victim, not the aggressor. They obviously are. And again, last Thursday, Tucker Carlson again blamed Ukraine for starting the war, although Russia invaded her.
Now, I have no problem with Eric Bolling calling out Tucker Carlson. I mean, this is what people in opinion journalism do. You call out people, you give your opinion, and I'm all for that, you know, giving different opinions on serious foreign policy issues. I do have to say, Eric Bolling's name-calling, which is what I call it, of Tucker Carlson as an alleged American, in my view, that is way out of bounds. That is way beyond the pale. How about saying, look, Tucker Carlson's commentary is so out of bounds, is so outlandish that Russian state media is using it as propaganda. How can you watch someone that's propaganda for a foreign government? I mean, that's all fine. But for you to say alleged American, come on, give me a break. And you would think somebody that has had the kind of scandals that Eric Bolling has had, that experience would have humbled him a bit and taught him not to rush to judgment about other people and not to go to the lowest common denominator. So I was very I don't watch Eric Bolling's show, but I was very disappointed to see that clip. I think that's the exact kind of thing we need less of in media these days, not more of. Hey, the frequent caller, David in the Bronx, he sent me this this great article all about $2 bills. And I am a $2 bill evangelist. Whenever I go to the bank and I cash my paycheck or whatever the case may be, the first thing, whenever they say, how do you want this back? I always say, give me as many $2 bills as you have. And the problem is with $2 bills, people don't spend them. When they come across a $2 bill because they're rare, they hoard them. They keep them because they think they're more valuable or something. When they're not, they're worth $2. So because because people don't spend them, that keeps them from going into circulation. But now that we're seeing inflation essentially make the dollar everything disappear, the dollar stores aren't dollar stores anymore. Dollar pizza has disappeared. Even the dollar menu at McDonald's, which a lot of people are very fond of, a lot of this can now cost $2. So Heather McCabe, she's a writer who runs a blog encouraging people to use the $2 bill. I'm a fan of the $2 bill. I love the artwork on the $2 bill, on the back of it. I think it's a great learning lesson about the Declaration of Independence. I like Thomas Jefferson. He's one of my favorite founding fathers, even though that's unfashionable to say these days. I love that he's on there. So I try to spend $2 bills whenever I can. So I would encourage you to do the same thing. I'm going to invite this woman who runs this website. The website is called Two Buckaroo. Heather McCabe, I've invited her on this program, so maybe she'll come on next week. But this is not a new issue for me. I have covered the $2 bill issue for a long time, and I always try to spend $2 bills and keep them in circulation, and I hope you do too. $2 bills account for just 0.001% of the $2 trillion worth of currency in circulation. So I don't know what it is. But I think years ago, the $2 bill was considered bad luck and superstitious people would rip off the corners of the bill to reverse the curse. That's nonsense. If you get a $2 bill, spend it. If you go to the bank, ask for it. This way they'll have to order more, and we'll get them back in circulation. All right, 800-848-9222. 8 open lines, so feel free to comment on any of the issues that we've been covering. $2 bills, Eric Bolling, Arnold Blonschnagger, whatever the case may be. Janet writes on the Arnold Blonschnagger quote, "Frank, there is no offense in this quote. What if he said, I will be back instead? What a difference, showing how touched he was by the experience. It changes everything." Exactly. I mean, that wouldn't have, that's not a movie line. "I will be back. I'll be back" is the movie line. So a lot of people thought that this was just kind of, I don't know, him being an extension of his brand. So, all right, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. Another big win for the New York Metropolitans yesterday against the Braves. I tell you, this is a big series for us. I use the term us like I'm playing. I'm not, shockingly. But the Braves are the only thing that can keep the Mets from finishing first in the National League East. So it's so important that we win this series against the Braves. And we got off to a good start last night. I may even violate my rule of not watching electronics on Saturday until 10 p.m. so that I can watch the Met game. They're playing around 7:30 against the Braves. It's going to be something. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Hey, in just a minute, we are going to bring you the latest on Hurricane Ian. We'll get the review of this week's pizza. And we'll see what else people have in mind. Oh, and Martha Byrne is going to be here. Very much looking forward to that. She'll give us an update on her husband's case. In the meantime, in the words of the great Bob Barker, help control the pet population. Make sure you get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Thanks for listening. Couple of quick notes. One, my thanks to someone who sent me an SMS text message. I don't have this person's name, but the Mets were off last night. I was going on and on about how the Mets won the first game of the series against the Braves. Yesterday was Thursday, so they were off. The first game of the series is against the Braves tonight. So they did not win the first game of the series against the Braves. They were off. I don't know why I thought they won. I know they won the series against the Marlins before that. Of course I knew the Mets were off last night. You know what I honestly think happened? I'm not joking here. I took about a 20-minute nap in my car before I came up to do the show last night. And I think I had a dream that they won. Because in my brain, I'm picturing them beating the Braves. But didn't happen. We're also wishing the best for the Baltimore Orioles, who won last night, who lost last night to the Red Sox. So they still are in the hunt for the playoffs. But after losing to the Red Sox yesterday, it becomes a lot less likely. But wishing the best for them. The other thing I was giving a lot more thought to, some of the better questions in the first hour of the Friday program, not like the ridiculous question that these three picked as the winner this week, but some of the better questions, I end up thinking about them for the rest of the show, sometimes the rest of the weekend. And I was thinking of the question from Mike in New Rochelle about my favorite radio DJs. And one that I also want to mention, in addition to the ones that I mentioned, I've always been quite fond of Meg Griffin, who's now on Sirius Satellite Radio. but she's been on a lot of great stations. She was on K-Rock, NEWFM, WBAI. A lot of you may know her from WBAI. WLIR out on Long Island, which is now our station on Long Island. And she's very good. She's got a great voice, and she has great taste in music. So I neglected to mention Meg Griffin as well. We're going to get to your calls in just a minute, 800-848-9222. I did want to mention, though, that there is new research that is going to be released on Monday that is going to reveal that shopping for nostalgic and retro items is in. I have to tell you, this does not surprise me in the least. This is from a marketing firm called, I believe it's pronounced Emarasis. That's how it's pronounced. I think this is technically embargoed until Monday, but I don't know what people are going to do if I talk about it now. But the key findings include that VHS tapes, Etch-a-Sketch, Polaroid cameras, mood rings, and lava lamps are the most popular products on America's vintage purchase list. You know, I used to have a lava lamp. In fact, I think I still have one in my mom's garage. I used to use it on the set of my TV show, Murano Vision. And maybe I'll dig that up somewhere. I'm sure my wife is thrilled at the prospect of me putting that up in my office again. But 3 in 10 consumers miss iconic TV commercials from the 90s, and 1/4 miss buying products through infomercials and catalogs, and 24% miss iconic TV jingles. We've covered all those things, and it is, interestingly enough, the physical stores that Americans would most happily travel back through time for include, no surprise here, Radio Shack, Blockbuster, Circuit City, and Borders. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I am curious what items you still purchase, what retro items you still purchase. You know, vinyl made quite a comeback. I'm wondering if VHS tapes can make that same kind of comeback. I don't think they can, because even though a lot of people are into it, vinyl records, if you listen to vinyl records, they have great quality. But VHS tapes, they degrade so quickly, they don't have great quality. So I don't think they're going to see the same kind of comeback. You know what I'd love to see is this nostalgia wave help the world of terrestrial radio. There's a young man that listens to the show. He calls in from time to time, Nick, out on Long Island. And this is, I love this guy because he's, I don't know what he is, 17, 18, 19, something. And he's a younger guy, and he loves terrestrial radio. He sent me a video on Instagram of him listening to our show in Long Island on the radio, on two different radios, one tuned to 770 WABC and one tuned to 680 WCBM in Baltimore. And for whatever reason, the signal hit his radios just right that he was able to get our show on both stations. And I love what this guy does. He's really into restoring old radios. He gave me an old transistor radio, which I use, which I just love. And I wish there were more young folks that took Nick's approach to radio. And I'd love to see radio. When I say radio, I mean radio. I'm not talking about podcasts. I'm not talking about streaming. I'm not talking about digital content. I'm talking about good old-fashioned, over-the-air terrestrial radio. I would love to see terrestrial radio experience the same kind of rebirth and because of nostalgia and this desire for retro items that records have. But according to this research, Etch-a-Sketch, Polaroid, VHS tapes, that's the big thing. And it reminded me a couple of months ago, I interviewed the fellow who started this website, Free Blockbuster. And basically, Free Blockbuster is a place where people can leave movies. It's like those mini libraries, but it's just VHS tapes and DVDs. Free Blockbuster is a place where people can leave movies so other people can borrow them. So like those little free libraries where you can take or leave a book, this is for VHS tapes or DVDs and anything else you want to share with your neighbors. So it's really neat. You can learn more about them at freeblockbuster.org. And so I interviewed the founder of this group, Free Blockbuster, and I asked him, what's the appeal? This is a few months ago. What's the appeal of VHS tapes? Tell me about your fondness for VHS tapes. Why does anyone still care about VHS tapes? Can't you get a DVD player or better yet, just download whatever movie you want digitally?
Yeah, you know, we have a lot of different options for entertainment, and I think it's one of the amazing things about living in the modern era. But I think there's also stuff that I have on VHS that isn't available on DVD and isn't available on streaming. And so to be able to kind of be a video archaeologist and find that stuff, that's really exciting. You probably know that VHS has kind of had a resurgence among young people recently. And a young person who was actually writing for their college newspaper asked me, when did you start collecting VHS tapes? And I laughed because back when I was a kid, we just called it collecting movies. But there's a texture to it, and there's a value to it that's beyond just being able to, you know, you can watch the new Marvel movie, or you can find something interesting on VHS or on DVD that you're not going to find on a streaming site.
So retro is back with the revival of bargain and nostalgia hunting through open markets like The Real Real and eBay. And one of the shows, I don't watch this show. It's on my list to watch one day, but my younger siblings all love it. Stranger Things, they champion retro in pop culture these days. So it's no surprise that today's shoppers are hungry for the products of the past. And one of the products that they're hungry for, VHS tapes. So I'll ask a multifaceted question. One, do you still use VHS tapes? 800-848-9222. If not, what product of the past, what retro item are you nostalgic for? 800-848-9222. And lastly, and this is the most important question for me, is what do you think we could do to get terrestrial radio to capitalize on this nostalgia or retro craze? 800-848-9222. Because the thing that I've noticed, even people that are champions of radio in our industry, and when I say radio, I mean both talk and music and sports, whatever else, they basically are already preparing for the next wave. They're saying, oh, yeah, streaming is a great way to get more people to listen to our station. And it's true. It's true. Podcasts, a great way to get more people listening to our station. I am not willing to throw in the towel on terrestrial radio yet. I mean, call me a dinosaur, but I love terrestrial radio, and I'm not going to see it go down without a fight. It kills me. It's bad enough cars don't have cassette players or CD players anymore. You know, Mike from New Rochelle, who called earlier, he put in a lot of time in making this mix CD for me to listen to, and I was going to listen to it in the car. I realized Rachel's car doesn't even have a CD player. So cars don't have cassette decks. They don't have CD players. Now the newer cars are coming out without an AM radio, and I think that is just awful. So I'm not going down without a fight. What piece of retro, doesn't have to be technology, could be a toy, a mood ring, anything. What retro item do you miss? Do you still patronize? Do you still use VHS tapes? And what do you think that the world of terrestrial radio can do to capitalize on this retro craze? 800-848-9222. John is in Freehold. Hello, John.
Hey, what's up, Frank? Pleasure as always.
Thanks.
First off, I was born in 1990, so I grew up in the 90s. I have every Disney movie on VHS.
Well, that was a hot item back in the day.
Yeah, I still kept them. I mean, I guess they're not worth much, but to me, they're worth a lot, sentimentally. But I remember the commercials. They used to come on before the Lion King movie. It was like that little kid who was like packing a suitcase or whatever upstairs. Very nostalgic.
Yeah, but, I can understand that. And I remember I was never that into Disney films, honestly, but I remember they released a lot of sequels to theatrical Disney films just on VHS tapes and not in the theaters.
Yeah, like that Lion King 2, a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, but, Aladdin, I think, The Return of Jafar.
Yeah, and then I didn't really notice it until you just said it.
the past few weeks, I've been finding Dunkin' Yo-Yos in the stores.
Really?
And I've been buying them and, like, going home and playing with them and, like, doing the rocking the cradle and sleeping them and stuff. And, yeah, those are a lot of fun. I miss yo-yos.
Yeah, no, they are a lot of fun. Hey, John, thank you. 800-848-9222. Joe is in Ronkonkoma. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Frank. Great show. I listen to you every night on terrestrial radio on my car. And my dad, before he passed, he was a big he liked to videotape everything on VHS. And when he passed away, me and my sister inherited over, I think, about 400 VCR movies that he videotaped and stuff. I haven't gone through them yet with my sister. They're in my garage, but I hope they're still good. I mean, he taped movies from the 40s. He was like you. He liked Al Jolson. And I grew up, that's how I grew up, watching movies like that. Shane, I don't know if you remember Shane.
Of course, I love Shane. With Emma DeWilda or Brandon DeWilda, whatever his name was.
I have it on DVD. I have it on VHS. I don't know if you ever saw a movie. What is his name? Daniel Webster. Devil and Daniel Webster. If you ever have time, watch that, Frank. It is a great picture. I know you would like it. Something you could watch with Carmine when he's growing up. I love the movie. It's a great fall flick. You know, it's in New England, old times when Daniel Webster was running for president, but he never, of course, got elected. Great movie.
Yeah,
have a great weekend.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Yvette is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Yvette.
Yay. Hi there.
Hi.
So, the retro item I love and should have never been done away with is the record player and the huge speakers, like from the 80s, that used to break up the windows. I miss that a lot.
I thought for sure you were going to say unfiltered Marlboros, Yvette, but the record player, that they still make those. They still make record players.
But yeah, but they have CDs and streaming, and everything is so easy. Only way to really appreciate music, I don't know. I have to see what I'm playing.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And now, these days, it's easier to find. Thank you for the call, Yvette. It's easier to find a record than it is a CD, I think. You know, I see record players everywhere. I don't see CDs everywhere. It's tough to find CDs. 800-848-9222. Original Rick is in New Jersey. Hello, Original Rick.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Taking a call.
Sure.
Okay, two things. First of all, the gentleman that was calling about the VHS tapes, I inherited 800 from my mother, and he's going to be very disappointed when he watches them. First of all,
yeah, they degrade.
Yeah. Not only that, but the screen size, you know, the ratio is completely different, and they only had 480, resolution rather mm-hmm. than the 18. It's unwatchable. They really are. They're so blurry. You can't watch them.
Well, look, there's a reason they went out of fashion. There's a reason they're obsolete.
Yeah, they're only so high of quality, and then we had to go to CDs. Now, about the retro, I have a complete bookshelf full of retro because I just love reliving my memories. I have different versions of the Polaroid cameras, 16mm projectors. I have a 1903 light bulb. I have my original teddy bear. You know, I just love it all. But lately, I've been going after retro food, like Bosco, because I loved Bosco.
Well, did Bosco ever fall out of fashion? I mean, I still see Bosco all the time.
Yeah, you see it, but I never see anybody use it. I mean, I guess it's on the shelves, but I haven't bought it in 40 years. It's always Hershey's, you know, or something like that. Blatt's beer. Can't find it anywhere east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I can't find since you mentioned beer, and I have been looking. I, for the last, I'd say, 10 years, have not been able to find a bottle of Rheingold. And they used to be, they made quite a comeback back in the early to mid-90s, and then they tried for another comeback about 20 years ago. They were manufactured not in Brooklyn but in Utica, and they were everywhere for a little while. And I don't know what happened. I don't find Rheingold. I cannot find a bottle or a can of Rheingold anywhere. My beer might be Rheingold the dry beer, but if you're a Rheingold drinker, instead of thinking of Rheingold whenever you buy beer, you're really just not going to be drinking beer. Paul is in Astoria. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Frank. Good morning. How are you? Great show as always.
Thank you.
Always great talking to you.
Likewise.
The retro stuff that I like is 8-track tape.
Eight
tracks.
Yeah. You know what? Why do you think 8-tracks have not made the same kind of a comeback that that vinyl records have?
Well, probably because of the sound quality is really not that great, and you have to get a player that's going to accommodate it as well. And it's hard to find the players as well. I found some on eBay.
Mm. How much? How much are they going for on eBay?
Maybe like $40 to $50. They're really not that expensive.
Wait, the players are only going for $40 or $50?
Yeah, I've gotten some cheap ones in the past, yeah.
You know, my wife is going to kill you because I'm now looking up at purchasing one of these 8-track record players. That's pretty cool. I may pick up one of these.
Yeah, I've listened to Billy Joel, some Beatles, and there are also services where you could even send them out to be repaired as well. This all started because my grandparents had it in their house, and it was on those big console players. And basically, I just took a liking to it as a kid. And I remember even as a kid, they were even 8-track players in cars. We've talked
absolutely. So given the sound limitations of the 8-track, what is it that you really like about the 8-track?
Probably the nostalgia of it, you know, the fact that it's a different way to hear music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be clear and crisp like a CD, but however, it just gives you that like warm feeling, like hearing like static on an AM radio.
I'm with you. All right, Paul, I may find myself purchasing an 8-track because of you. Fred in Yonkers. Hello, Fred.
Hey, Frank. Good morning.
Morning.
I got one that's going to fill both of these things. A Panasonic Tootaloop radio. You ever hear of it?
I don't think so. Panasonic Tootaloop?
It's shaped like a ring, like a donut. And we used to put them on our bikes. So when you drove your bike, it would go over the handlebars. That thing is an AM radio, transistor battery. It would blow your mind.
Yeah, I'm just looking it up now. I have seen these before. I've never owned one, though. That's pretty neat. You have one of these?
I have a blue one, and it's one of my prized possessions.
Oh, that's pretty neat. Why did they stop making these? Because I think this is pretty convenient, and I think people would still want to wear these.
I think so.
Yeah,
it's kind of stylish.
Yeah, no, this is pretty neat. I love it. I'm gonna see about getting one of these too. Ahmed is in Brooklyn. Hello, Ahmed.
Yes, the great technology of the past was mini disc, magna optical drive, most durable format ever developed in history for audio or computer data.
Yeah, I mean, why did they? I guess it kind of got replaced by the iPod, right?
Well, sort of. Well, actually, the reason why it wasn't successful in the United States, American people didn't want it. Like, they preferred CDRs, which were like very much cheaper.
Mm.
So it was in a case. It was like old-fashioned technology. They put like the disc inside a protective case, and we put it into the drive. It opened up and read the opening of the protective case, the caddy. And it was very dual. They had a 1 gig technology. Sony used to have retail stores like Apple.
Yeah, no,
and
I don't.
A 1 gig one.
Sorry,
and
go ahead.
Musicians used it because they had like a stereo recorder. You use like a tape recorder.
Yeah, I knew a lot of radio people that used it. A lot of folks in radio were using mini disc for a long time as a recording format. I'm surprised it wasn't more durable. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Michael's in Indiana. Hello, Michael.
Hi. Good morning. Frank, I have three things. I only told Kevin, our your phone talent coordinator, about radio. I inherited a old Zenith World Band radio, you know, the small console kind with a huge
sure, sure.
antenna.
Absolutely, yes.
And also, I have an old U.S. Navy trainer AM radio that I would love to get in contact with. Who'd you say earlier? A guy that fixes old radios.
Yeah, his name's Nick. He's on Instagram. Are you on Instagram?
I don't do that social media. MySpace, Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know. First of all, nobody does MySpace unless you from 35 years ago. But his name's Nick Grassi. He calls into this program a great deal. Other than Instagram, I don't really know how to get in touch with him. But he does do a lot of radio repairs. That's kind of like a side hustle for him. But if you leave Kenneth your information, Michael, the next time Nick calls in, we'll give him your number. Okay.
Okay. And the third thing is my uncle has a real old piano that you put these paper cartridges in.
Oh yeah, and a player piano.
Yeah, well, it's different than all the other ones I've seen, but he has like 100 of these paper cartridges that he's only played it once for me, and I was just so fascinated by this thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
I found that very neat.
Michael, I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kenneth your information, and the next time Nick calls in, we'll connect him. We'll give him your number, basically. 800-848-9222. Hey, let me take one more call, then we'll do the $1,000 minute. Let me see who's been holding a while. Richard on the George Washington Bridge. Hopefully he made it out of there. Richard, you've been holding a while. What's on your mind?
Yes, I made it off the George Washington Bridge. I'm home in Fort Lee.
Wonderful.
Just wanted to comment on the $2 bills.
Great. I think my cousins Lou and Joni live in Fort Lee. You ever run into them?
Not that I know of.
Okay, all right.
I'm a bit of a vampire. I'm not out in the daytime much, so I don't meet a lot of people. Unfortunately.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Interesting that the last time I only spoke to two radio shows, and both times it concerned currency. The last time I spoke to you, it was about cryptocurrency.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm...
And this time I just wanted to note that $2 bills are great for tips. People always, doorman told me this a long time ago. You might not remember the person gave you a 5 or a 20, but you'll always remember the person who gave you a $2 bill.
You know, you're exactly right, Richard. I tip with $2 bills. And when you hand a valet a $2 bill, you're exactly right. Their face lights up and they'll often shout to one of their colleagues, hey, look at this. They got $2 bill. That you're exactly right. That is a great way to leave an impression.
I use them in strip clubs. A lot of people do.
A lot of people do. That's one of the places where you can actually find a lot of $2 bills is gentlemen's clubs. 800-848-9222. All right. Those of you that are holding, if you want to keep holding, you can. We'll get to you, maybe. Martha Byrne is scheduled to be here in about 5 minutes. We're going to do the $1,000 minute. If you want to try and win $1,000, I have to tell you, these are pretty easy questions. I said that yesterday, and the person didn't know what the name of Hurricane Ian was.
Jinxing it already.
I am jinxing it. But let me tell you something. Be honest with yourself here. If you don't know the name of Hurricane Ian, don't call in. If you don't know how many continents there are, don't call in. If you don't know how many letters in the alphabet there are, don't call in. If you don't know how to spell cat without us spotting you the C and the T, don't call in. For the rest of you, these are very reasonable questions. I think I could stop any person in the hallway here, and they would be able to answer 9 out of 10 of these. The last one's a little tricky. And one you kind of either know or don't know. All of this is stuff that I have mentioned on the show this week. 800-848-9222. If you're the seventh caller, we'll play the $1,000 minute straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the construction accident lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Jimmy Buffett's Surfing in a Hurricane. You know, Jimmy Buffett really built a whole business empire with Margaritaville. To what he was able to do, turn being a singer into a business empire like that, is really extraordinary. I'd like to figure something like that out, right? Imagine a Frank Moranoville empire of hotels and casinos and stuff. That'd be kind of neat, right?
Morano Vision, the experience.
I like it. All right, it's time for us to try and give $1,000 away. Hopefully this is somebody that knows the name of the hurricane that has been dominating the news for the last 3 days, is Ian. It is time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents, it's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
Let's say hello to Brad in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
I'm great, Brad. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
All right. You ready to go, Brad?
Yeah.
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed?
Oh, well, give it a shot.
Okay, great. You know the rules, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, let's get started. Name a device that is used to cook food.
The frying pan.
What state has been battered by Hurricane Ian?
Florida.
What professional sport does Tom Brady play?
Football.
What actor has been the voice of Darth Vader?
Oh, my David Prowse.
You know, we're gonna count that because of the controversy this week. We'll count that. How many cupcakes are in a baker's dozen?
13.
What is a baby cow called?
A heifer.
I don't think that's accurate. No, that's not. A baby cow is
a calf.
You were thinking too quickly. A heifer is a female cow that's not yet pregnant, so that's not necessarily a baby cow. It is a calf. Brad, you played well, though, and at a good pace. I'm going to put you on hold and give Kenneth your information, and we'll send you a consolation prize. The reason I gave him David Prowse is because he might have technically he's right, right? I mean, David Prowse did record the voice of Darth Vader. It wasn't in any of the films. The answer I was looking for was James Earl Jones. But clearly, if you know David Prowse, that's a tougher answer than James Earl Jones, but there's no way we could have given him Heifer. Hey, somebody that knows a thing or two about acting and Hollywood is Martha Byrne. She is a 3-time Emmy Award-winning actress. She's a writer and a producer with a career spanning over 30 years in the entertainment industry, and she's also the wife of a highly decorated NYPD sergeant by the name of Mike McMahon, who has been in the eye of the storm on some legal issues, courtesy of the FBI. She's been kind enough to be on our show before. Martha, it's great to talk with you again.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for having me back. I appreciate it. Unfortunately, this is still going on.
Well, so give us for people that didn't hear our previous conversation, Martha, give folks the Reader's Digest version of what you and your husband are going through.
So my husband was a retired NYPD sergeant. He retired in 2003 and became a licensed private investigator and became a very successful one at that, and worked on hundreds of cases, very successful. And he worked on a case for a couple of days in 2016-17, a normal case where he was called by a translation company out of New York, did some background checks for a company that was looking for some assets here, didn't think about it again. And on October 28th, 2020, they arrested him, came to our house at 6 o'clock in the morning in front of my kids, and said that he was being arrested for failure to register as a foreign agent, which is FARA, which you've been kind of hearing about on the news a little bit more recently. And we've been fighting it ever since. It's been an absolute nightmare. He did nothing wrong. He was a licensed PI. The company he worked for, he was paid with a bank check. It was, everything was normal. And to this day, even in thousands of pages of discovery, there's no evidence against him of his guilt, only of his innocence. And the FBI, the DOJ, they've known this for years. I mean, years. Never brought in to talk to him. Never asked him to be an asset in this case. 4 years later, your life turns upside down for absolutely no reason. And it's just been a horrible situation. You know, Mike, when he did surveillance on this case that he worked on, the company was a Chinese construction company, but they had assets. Someone had stolen assets and they were looking for them here. So they hired a local company in the States just to find the assets, find the money. That's what he was hired to do, civil matter. So it was normal. There was nothing about it that was strange. And he did everything by the book. When he did surveillance, he notified the local police that he was there, that he was armed, so at his make and model of his car. You know, he worked with two other NYPD retired detectives on the case and surveillance. He notified two federal agents about the case who he knew at the time. And our government decided not to use any of those law enforcement officers in this matter, completely ignored them and spoke to Chinese agents instead, which to me is absolutely shocking.
Where's your husband now?
He's home, thank God.
But his PI license has been revoked.
Extended.
And yes. What is the status of his legal case at the moment? What's the next step?
So we just filed prosecutorial misconduct against the DOJ on August 8th. We're requesting hearings, citing bias against my husband. So we're waiting on response from that. We're continuing to go back to the government and try to get this dismissed because it should never have happened in the first place. And the fact that we're here today is appalling. It's disturbing as an American that our privacy, this hero. And my husband won 75 accommodations on the NYPD. He won the Combat Cross. He ran into burning buildings, took gunfire. You know, he is a hero and was putting his life on the line for us every single day and willing to die for strangers. And this is how he's treated
government? I think it's just horrible. And the fact that the FBI and law enforcement would take the words of these communist Chinese agents before even speaking with your husband, who seems like he did everything above board, is just beyond the pale to me. Now, the reason I was eager to have you on the program today is because there's going to be a big fundraiser this Saturday in Nanuet, New York, from 3 to 9 p.m. I'm going to post the information on my Facebook page at facebook.com/MoranoFan. But it's in Nanuet, New York. And there's going to be food. Eddie Gallagher is going to be there, who certainly knows a thing or two about going through being through the ringer on this. His group, the Pipe Hitter Foundation, is supporting your husband. And if people want to go, it's going to be at the Pearl River Elks Club at 2041 Elks Drive in Nanuet, New York. We have a ton of listeners in Rockland County, so I'm hoping that we get a big turnout. But even if people can't make the event in person, what's the website if they want to make a contribution to your husband's legal defense fund?
Thank you so much. So it is pipehitterfoundation.org, and my husband's Michael McMahon. So if you follow his profile and you go read his story, then there's a place to donate on his page. And, you know, for us, this is about every American. You know, this is kind of you posted something like, this is a rally for every American that needs to fight back against this kind of thing. And if we don't fight back, it'll continue. So we are going to do that until he's exonerated, so that these decisions are made long before, not to do things like this to heroes, innocent people. You know, we are not collateral damage in someone else's agenda. My family is not collateral damage just because of an agenda of somebody else, political, personal, whatever the situation may be. So we have to fight back. So please come. Eddie Gallagher and the Pipe Hitter Foundation has been incredible to us. And the fact that Eddie and Andrea, his wife, are coming on Saturday, there's going to be a lot of support there from cops and firemen and first responders. And like, we have to get behind each other. And I told Eddie and Andrea, I said, when this is all over, Mike and I will use this experience, and we will help other people. I mean, if I can read through thousands of pages and help somebody and help them with their case, and Mike is obviously an incredible investigator, if we can help with our time to help people who are going through this, we are absolutely going to do it. Nobody's going to stop us. So please come.
Yeah, and, it's going to be a great event. Saturday from 3 to 9 p.m., Pearl River Elks Club, 2041 Elks Drive in Nanuet, New York. And again, if people can't make it to the event, but they want to make a contribution, they can go to pipehitterfoundation.org. You know, Martha, I'm sorry that you guys are going through all this, but, you know, my grandmother used to say that God never gives you more than you can handle. And it sounds like the kind of strength that you and your husband exhibiting, it sounds like this is as unpleasant as it is for you guys. It sounds certainly like something you can handle.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we are a strong family. My children are incredible. You know, my kids never should have had to go through this. You know, shouldn't be part of their life story to watch their hero father, who they admire and love and adore, who's been there for them since they were born, you know, be treated this way. But you know what? If their parents fight back against it, and we show them that you can't be pushed around by bullies, and we can fight through this and win, don't be afraid. Fear is what stops people from being strong. And fear is something in your mind. You need to get over it. These are people. This is something that happened to us, and we're going to overcome it. And we're going to be stronger. And hopefully our children will see that when somebody does something wrong to you and they mistreat you and they devalue you, you fight back and you don't give up until you prove them wrong. And if I can teach that to our kids, then we've done our job. And if we can help other people be inspired to fight back against this. I mean, it's scary. They try to scare you, intimidate you. You know, this is not America. This is not how law enforcement is supposed to be to operate. And look, we know so many people in law enforcement, incredible people in that worked in the federal government who would lay their lives down for us, who are great, incredible people. The people who do the wrong thing, it's a reflection on the entire agency, department. That's wrong. That's not the way this should happen. So what you have to do is you have to make a point to show the ones who have done the wrong thing, to teach the ones, the good guys, that we're out there fighting for you too, that we respect law enforcement. We look up to and value law enforcement, but we don't value bad cops, period. That's, nobody likes bad cops. So we need to do something we can to fix that. If we can, we have to fight. And that's what we're doing.
Well,
so thank you for having me on. It really does help.
Because
people believe what they read sometimes, and it's just not true. And so we have to get out and get the word out properly.
Well, best of luck to you and to Mike. Please continue to keep us posted on this. Best of luck with your event on Saturday.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Martha Byrne, thank you. You too. 800-848-9222. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame in just a minute. This is the Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
B. This is indeed the Frank Morano program, The Other Side of Midnight. Couple of quick notes. One, if you want to stay in touch with me or if you want me to put you on my email list, you can email me and just say put me on your email list. And my email, I do read every email personally and I respond to most of them as long as it's not, you know, too long. Frank.Morano at WABCRadio.com. That's Frank.Morano at WABCRadio.com. I also, I came across something that I thought was so interesting. We were talking this week about the passing of former New Jersey Governor Jim Florio. And Curtis reached out to me because he knows I'm an archivist of old school radio shows and stuff. He says, do you have any audio of Bob Grant talking about, you know, Jim Florio? Because, you know, Bob Grant went to town on Jim Florio. He would call him Flab Flab Florio and vowed to make New Jersey Florio free in 93. But so I looked through my stuff and I couldn't find anything. I couldn't help him out. But then I said, oh, let me look online. Maybe I can find something of Bob Grant talking about Jim Florio. Couldn't find anything. But I came across something that was so interesting from 41 years ago. A debate in the New Jersey gubernatorial election between Tom Kane and Jim Florio, two future governors. Kane ended up winning that race, and then Florio would become governor 8 years later after two terms of Tom Kane. This was such a great debate. And, you know, everyone always talks about the Lincoln-Douglas debates and how great they were and how different it was back then that thousands of people would gather to watch these debates without any amplification, and then people would leave, go home to dinner, and then come back out to watch the rest of the debate, and people would go for hours and hours and hours, and I'm sure that, and that is incredible, and it does give you a perspective of how different things are. But I was watching this debate on the YouTube, and I'll tell you what I found so interesting, and my friend Roger Stone worked on this campaign on behalf of Tom Kane, but I know some Democrats that worked on behalf of it for Florio. What was so interesting is this. The moderator of the debate begins by laying down the ground rules and tells each candidate, you have up to 7 minutes for an opening statement. 7 minutes. Can you imagine that today? These days, if a debate even has an opening statement, it's 30 seconds or a minute. There are no debates among gubernatorial candidates these days. What you have is candidates who have these pre-prepared sound bites that they look for a way to weasel into the debate so that it gets repeated on the news for the next 24 hours. There's no real attempt to address serious policy discussions. What it is an attempt to get your soundbite repeated, an attempt to trip up your opponent so he says something dumb that they then report as a gaffe. This debate between Tom Kaine and Jim Flora, this was a real debate. And you had two men, I think, who were of estimable character laying out their visions for the state. And it's interesting. I watched the whole thing. I'm not a guy that has a lot of time to watch an hour of video. But knowing what has happened in New Jersey over the last 40 years, it was interesting hearing their questions and their responses to how they would address the concerns that New Jersey would be facing in the future. So I was so taken with this that link to it on my Facebook page. So if you want to watch this debate after our show, you can go to facebook.com/MoranoFan, and I have the debate right up there on top. All right. Without further ado, let us end. Well, actually, Joe in Staten Island has been holding a while. Let me let him comment for more than 15 seconds, and then we'll do 15 seconds of fame. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Frank. Yeah, this will be pretty quick.
Sure.
I was just commenting on the retro deal. Mm-hmm. Flip phone. I'm talking to you right now. I got one.
Oh, really? And you know, why do you keep the flip phone rather than a smartphone?
Well, my wife would agree with you because she wanted me to get one of those big, nice screen Apple phones or something like that. With me, that'll be broken in 10 seconds. So a flip phone is sturdy. It's small. You could store it easily. This particular one, they're calling it a not-so-dumb flip phone because it does – it's amazing. It does almost everything that a smartphone does, except that it doesn't have a touch screen. And I should add that I got it for free. Verizon upgraded me for free because I had an old flip phone and they were getting rid of the 3G network that they call it. They had to move up to 4G or 5G. And this they gave me for free. But I should have kept shopping because now I found out they have a flip phone with a touch screen.
Interesting.
That to me would be the ideal.
Well, that's pretty neat. My Aunt Camille has a flip phone, and so does Steve Sharippa from The Sopranos and Blue Bloods. They both use flip phones as well. All right, without further ado, let us give you an opportunity to be heard for 15 seconds. It's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Eddie!
The sages say, justice is a lame policeman, but he always catches up. Let's go, Brandon.
Steve.
The hard left will torture innocent people. And, folks, don't be fooled by the hard left. They'll try to fool you to pretend that you're on their side. Go, Buchanan, go. Go, Buchanan, go. Go, Buchanan, go. Go, Buchanan.
Arnie.
Sid is not a moron, and he needs to Google the Dobbs Ferry Deli shooting. Google the Dobbs Ferry Deli shooting.
Mike.
Tomorrow, Frank, I'm on a Jersey Turnpike, southbound. You know what? I spoke to Dominic last night. I'll say it now. This horrendous hurricane in Florida. I still haven't got word of my 90-year-old mother and my good sister, Carol. Anyone who's got friends or relatives, please say a prayer. Be optimistic. All the best.
Absolutely. Ralph.
Okay. On the $1,000 minute question, would that be a correct answer to say, Frankie, James Earl Jones on the Star Wars question?
Yes, yes. Gary.
Support the Trump peace initiative in the Ukraine. Trump is doing something very important in pushing for peace now in the Ukraine, and he will be attacked viciously for this.
Leo.
Frank, you were in one of the previous shows talking about periodic table of elements by mass, atomic mass. The inventor was actually Dmitry Mendeleev, not the person you was mentioning. I cannot remember anymore who he was.
No, yeah, I know Mendeleev invented the periodic table. You learned that in the sixth grade. At least I did. Sixth grade chemistry. I think I was talking about something else. All right. Hey, that slams the lid on things for today. Have a great weekend. Stay in touch. I'll be back on Monday with some more adventures. Frank Moreno, good day.